Do you feel that you are protected? Do you feel in some way that you've been left behind? In other related news, the scramble to get out of the Middle East continues. Amelia was on board a government chartered flight and spoke with reporters about that initial delay.
There was an issue with the checking in, the airport side, because it was a charter flight. And then because that delayed us, I think we waited 3 hours to be checked in. Because of that delay, the pilot then ran out of working hours. He couldn't legally drive.
On those and many other issues, we'll be hearing from the Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, later in this hour. In other news, Formula One star Sir Lewis Hamilton getting ready for the season to open.
That's what I want to see. Take it back from the French, take it back from the Spanish, take it back from Portuguese and the British. It's so, so important for the future of that country and for that continent.
The Portuguese and the British still own Africa? Those stories and more after the news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the first government-chartered flight bringing British nationals back from the Middle East has arrived at Stansted Airport. It was meant to depart on Wednesday night, but was grounded by technical issues. More than 140,000 people have told the Foreign Office they want help to leave the region. These people were on the flight from Oman back to the UK.
We actually left Dubai on Saturday when it all started. We just thought, well, it'd be safer to drive to Muscat.
We've been travelling for about 42 hours from Dubai. We left yesterday lunchtime. We travelled straight to the airport in Oman and then waited at the airport yesterday for 8 hours. And the flight was cancelled and then delayed to 4 p.m. today.
The US and Israel say they're moving into a new phase of their war on Iran. Israel has carried out further strikes on the Iranian capital Tehran overnight, as well as on Beirut in Lebanon. The US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth says access to the UK's base on Diego Garcia will help Washington intensify attacks.
It was unfortunate that the Brits didn't, from day one, say, hey, go ahead and have access. But we got there. We got there. And that's now part of the way that we're operationalizing bomber runs. And as part of when we say more to come, it's more fighter squadrons, it's more capabilities, it's more defensive capabilities.
The Defence Secretary John Healey has declined to rule out UK aircraft taking part in strikes on Iran. Separately, two helicopters are due to arrive in Cyprus today to improve the island's protection from drones. A British base there, RAF Akrotiri, was struck on Sunday and targeted again on Monday. In other news, the Labour MP Joni Reid has voluntarily suspended herself from the party after her husband was arrested on suspicion of spying for China. David Taylor has been released on bail after being arrested on Wednesday. Miss Reid has stressed she's done nothing wrong but says she doesn't want to be a distraction while investigations take place. She's also previously said that she's never seen anything to suggest her husband has broken any law. And the British government will boycott tonight's opening ceremony at the Winter Paralympics in Italy. Officials will stay away in protest against the involvement of Russian and Belarusian athletes. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,413. It closed down 153 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some brands sponsor athletes for the glory, but not Quaker. We're real food. So we sponsor Team GB for the real stuff, the ugly stuff. The 5 a.m. alarms, the blisters, bruises, goggle marks and mountains of sweaty laundry. Because we know that getting to greatness takes a delicious helping of ugliness. And my word, our porridge is ugly. Look at the state of it. Quaker, deliciously real, deliciously ugly, sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Friday, March the 6th, the Middle East conflict comes to home with the Prime Minister's pledge that he will look after all people, particularly those of the Jewish and Muslim faith. I'll be asking if you are of those faiths. Do you sense that you are getting the protection you need? Protection in Cyprus still a long way off as regards the Royal Navy. That ship will not sail. Others, though, on their way, don't worry, from France, from Spain, from Greece, but the UK lagging behind. In a related story,
the Defence Secretary, John Healey, told me he is not annoyed as he defended the fact that HMS Dragon will take over a week to arrive at RAF Akrotiri. I'm LBC's Aggie Chambray with the exclusive.
And in another related story, pressure now on the Green Party leader, Zach Polensky, refusing to sign a motion at the City Hall about the death of the Ayatollah, and also saying this.
It's really important that we show leadership on this by making sure that we're talking down this conflict, de-escalating it, and getting people back to a negotiating table.
There are also media reports that he reportedly laughed about the story that the statue of Winston Churchill had been defaced. We'll give you more details on that. There are other stories around that are not to do with the Middle East. Sir Lewis Hamilton, on the eve, of course, of the Grand Prix season getting underway, calls for the people of Africa to take their countries back from the British and other former colonial powers such as the Portuguese. I didn't know that they were still running Africa. How exactly does that work? And what seemed to be a fairly all-encompassing report into SEND, S-E-N-D, Special Education Needs and Disabilities. And we'll give you later details on that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, as we come to the almost the end of the first week as regards the Middle East conflict, there is so much to work through. And where do you think the Prime Minister finds himself this morning after what I think is fair to say has been certainly some mixed messages at the start? Is he now starting to find his stride? Well, he called a Downing Street press conference yesterday to provide an update on British involvement in the conflict, following accusations the government had been too indecisive and lacked preparedness. During the press conference, Sakir announced 4 extra fighter jets will be sent to the region. He also told journalists the first evacuation charter flight from Oman to the UK, which was meant to depart on Wednesday, and remember, we now learn, had problem getting the passengers on, and the pilot hadn't had his or her necessary rest. That flight arriving at Stansted Airport in the early hours of this morning. But as a message from the PM's update that we're picking up on this, one of community relations and what the government is doing to ensure the global conflict doesn't sow further division in the UK.
Faced with this new geopolitical crisis, the sad fact is that some will try to use it to divide us. That's why the government is reaching out to communities across the United Kingdom, Jewish and Muslim alike, making sure that communities and places of worship have appropriate protective security in place. But look, as a nation, we should come together in this moment. Those citizens that are stuck in the region, scared and in need of help, come from all backgrounds. The armed forces who protect them come from all backgrounds too. We are united by our common humanity and our love of this country.
So is that the reality? As you perhaps get ready to go to your mosque later today, as you get ready to go to your synagogues, if you are a Muslim, if you are Jewish, do you get that sense of safety? The government using the words reach out, that modern expression now, I'll reach out to someone. No, you won't, you just call them, but never mind. They're reaching out to those. Do you feel that you have been reached out to? Do you feel a sense of security? Or sadly, the conflict we see in the Middle East is just deepening divisions here in the United Kingdom. I want to hear from you if you are, as I say, Jewish or Muslim. But let's get some guidance first from Dr. Jonathan Romain, who's rabbi and convener of the Rabbinic Court of Great Britain, and joins me now. How would you characterise the level of support that you have experienced and other people of the Jewish faith? Good morning, Rabbi.
Yes, good morning. And I think Keir Starmer was quite right to point out that we are different over here, and we have a different society, and we really should not import all the tensions and the conflicts of the Middle East. And certainly, you know, there will be Muslims and Jews who will take different positions on what's happening. But I think one of the things that, and I think Keir Starmer pointed out, we're British citizens, and if that means anything, we have to value tolerance, and that means disagreeing agreeably. And actually, I would turn it on its head and say, rather than worry about are we doing demonstrations and are we for or against, the real question is how can we come together to help Iran or Iranians after the bombs and the missiles have stopped? So if people are worried, then the real answer is not to go on the streets, but to think, can we aid Iranians after the hostilities have ceased? Can we help any refugees that come over here? That's what really counts, rather than pontificating or demonstrating and doing some things practical and positive.
Rabbi, when families gather tonight for Friday night supper, what level of support do you think there'll be from Jewish families for Donald Trump's actions?
It's divided. I mean, the Jewish community is very diverse. Some people will say this was the worst thing and it's Iraq all over again. Others will say, no, no, this is different, because unlike Iraq, there was a real, real threat. We've seen the Iranians disrupt the region for decades. We've seen them repress their own people horribly. And they do actually have a uranium, and they do have the desire to make nuclear weapons. There's no dodgy dossiers, some very clear records, and we know they've got uranium. We know we've got the ballistic missiles. I think the lesson of Iraq was not, oh, don't go in, don't intervene. The lesson of Iraq was, yes, do intervene where necessary, and it can be very moral to intervene, but you have to have a plan, you have to have an idea where it ends. And I think that's a religious view, not just a political one. If you think, certainly Christians will think of a Good Samaritan, and the Good Samaritan was the person who didn't pass by, who didn't say, oh, there's somebody in distress, we'll just walk on. The Good Samaritan not only intervened, but he saw it through, and he came back, and he looked after the man, and he made sure that he was fine. So, yes, I do think it's moral to intervene, even though the cost is horrible. I mean, I'm not in favour of war. I'm not a Trump supporter. But I do think that on balance, it may have been the right thing to go in, providing we've got a pathway at the end for a better Iran.
Lastly, do you think are you getting enough, or could authorities such as central government, local authorities and the police do more? And if so, what?
Oh, one can always do more, but I think people have been very much on alert, particularly after the first Iran war. I was in touch yesterday with two Muslim leaders. We are very keen to show that, yes, we may have differences, both within the within the Muslim community and within the Jewish community, not just between the two communities, but within ourselves. There's a lot of disagreement, and yet we have to remember this is Britain. We have a different set of values, and we can disagree, but we have to do it agreeably and civilly.
Grateful for your time. Thanks, Rabbi Dr. Jonathan Romain, Rabbi and the Convener of the Rabbinic Court of Great Britain, taking us to 11 minutes after 7. Let's bring into the conversation Sheikh Ibrahim Moghra, who is an imam from Leicester, active in the field of interfaith relations, and joins us now. Same first question, if I can, to you, Imam. Do you feel that you and other Muslim friends and families are getting the necessary support from the government? Good morning.
Hello, good morning. First of all, I want to say that our Prime Minister is spot on. We must continue to live together in harmony. It's not easy. It's very, very difficult. Everybody's angry. Emotions are running high. There's a lot of feeling of despair. And we've got to keep working at it because we live here in this country. I think there's always more that a government can do, civil society can do. We need to look after each other. It's not just up to the government. We sadly see a huge increase in Islamophobic attacks. We saw the attempted terrorist attack at a mosque in Manchester. It is frightening, and people are scared, particularly women. They feel very, very vulnerable. A dear family friend of ours was followed from the mosque. Melissa was wearing a headscarf, and she was intimidated, harassed, spat at. And these are real people facing these hate crimes, and we have to come together as a society, look out for each other, call out the hate, and disagree well, respectfully. Jonathan and I are good friends. We agree on many things. Many things that he said, I agree with him, and there are things that I totally disagree with him, particularly in terms of the US and Israel going into Iran in the manner that they have.
Go ahead, Imam. My apologies. Go on.
But thank you. But we must learn to respect one another's views, however disagreeable they may be. And we need to set an example for our younger ones. I worry a lot for young Muslims and others who are so angry about everything that they see happening, where international law has collapsed, where we pick and choose which countries to challenge, right, and which countries to ignore. So there is a lot of anger out there.
Imam, there's considerable media attention to a March demonstration planned later this month by the Islamic Human Rights Commission. Should that go ahead?
This is the question that we always visit. On the one hand, we say that we're a free liberal society and we have right to protest. On the other hand, when it's not to our taste, We don't want those protests to take place. I think as long as people are peaceful, they are within the parameters of the law and do not incite hatred for anyone, then that is an outlet. People should have an outlet. As I said, our young people are desperate. They feel despair. They feel helpless. They feel no one's listening. And perhaps going out onto the street peacefully, calling for an end to war, for diplomatic solutions to the problems of the world, I think is a healthy way to express how you're feeling.
Lastly, Imam, do you think no one's listening, particularly to younger people? I'm sure you're listening, but I mean as regards, say, central government, local government, other authorities.
Well, it's challenging because the practice of the UK government for over a decade now has been, at least in terms of Muslim communities, to pick and choose who they will talk to, who they will listen to. And I think it's important for government to listen to a broad spectrum of representative bodies and individuals from all of our communities to find a solution that is for the good of all of British society.
Grateful for your time. Thank you very much to you. And best wishes, of course, your fellow people in your mosque, Sheikh Ibrahim Moghra, Imam from Leicester. If you are Jewish, if you are Muslims, we're apparently reaching out and providing protection. Is that how you feel? And in a related story,
our top military planners and air defence experts arrive in Cyprus today, and they will work alongside the US planners to coordinate the strengthening of air defences.
Defence Secretary John Healey telling LBC's Aggie Chambray yesterday at Cyprus about the UK defensive force on its way. Just 10:17, LBC News headlines now, Dominic Ellis.
The first government chartered flight to bring Britons back from the Middle East has landed at Stansted Airport. The US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth has warned there'll be a dramatic surge in firepower on Iran in the coming days. And the Labour MP Joni Reid has voluntarily suspended herself from the party after her husband was arrested on suspicion of spying for China. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales, sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays of about 5 miles on the M11 northbound from Junction 8 at Bishop Stortford. It's because of the emergency repair works. It's slow heading up towards Junction 9 at Saffron Walden. Very slow on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 2 at the A2 to the Dartford Tunnel. And that's because a car is on fire. There are restrictions on the M4 eastbound exit slip road at Junction 4 because a lorry overturned on the Junction roundabout earlier this morning. There's still some debris on the road and also some fuel, so there are still restrictions. On the underground, the Piccadilly line remains part suspended and there are severe delays on the Bakerloo and Jubilee lines. And on the trains, all services via East Croydon are disrupted after a signal failure.
This is LBC.
This is your business. This is your business supercharged with the help of Zero Accounting Software. These are your numbers. These are your numbers sorted with the help of Zero Accounting Software. This is you.
Hi.
This is you taking business where you want with the help of Zero Accounting Software. This is your business supercharged with the help of Zero and having your numbers sorted all at the same time so you can finally focus on taking business where you want to. Supercharge your business today with the help of Zero.
Search Zero with an X.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Hi. I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment that you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Oh, just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays, backing your future.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7, we really are bringing this Middle East conflict back home. We will, of course, look at all the global events and the developments regarding Israel and the United States and Donald Trump and military preparedness. But this is one, particularly Friday, a day of such significance when Jewish families get together for Friday night and Muslims go off to their mosques. I think it is relevant that we use Friday to explore that. John, you'll be the first caller on that. This aspect does not make the front page of the newspapers, and I wouldn't expect it to, but other aspects do. The Daily Mail, for some of you, not all of you, for some of you, I repeat, not all of you, desperate and deluded is how they characterise the United Kingdom's response. We have got the Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, joining us later in this hour. We might put some of that to him. Other front pages focus perhaps more on global events. Starmer, US must negotiate with Iran, is the front page of the Daily Telegraph. For the Times, Trump, I must help to choose Iran's next leader, which would seem rather an ambitious claim from Donald Trump on that one. Kemi Badenoch is on the front page of the Daily Express. We can't stand by and expect others to help Britain. And we'll be putting that to David Lammy, the Deputy Prime Minister. Quickly to the LBC app, as we quite rightly point out, and we turned to the beginning, the Iran war now enters the end of its first week, effectively, and they talk about those charter flights touching down at last. And the front page, oh, we're going to hear this from, I think, Aggie Chambre, Deputy Political Editor, who's in the studio with me now. The Daily Mirror, very excited about a Top Gun hero, a British pilot, who I think Aggie was speaking with yesterday in Cyprus. But that's to come. John and Hemel Hempstead, we're talking about safety back here at home, particularly for our Jewish and Muslim friends. What do you take from it? Good morning.
Morning. Just want to say, regarding the recent call from the imam and kind of hypocrisy around it all, you know, for 50 years, Iran has sponsored state terrorism. And now we're saying on the front page of some of the publications that we should, you know, negotiate with what is a terrorist state.
Well, how else do we bring about a peaceful resolution if not through... You're not going to bomb a new government into place, are you?
No, but we're not talking about a splinter cell movement either. That is a fraction of a religion. We're talking about a whole country that has now influenced other countries to act on their behalf in acts of terrorism going over the last 50 years.
Well, I don't know if you can say every single 90 of the 90 million Iranians has done that. Surely it's the regime who seized power all those years ago, no?
Correct. And a lot of those majority of people are still living under the fear of that regime. And, you know, there is only one way to eradicate this, and that is to go forth into the face of adversity and, you know, try and eradicate. Oh, it's not going to last forever, because there are two sides to the Islamic religion, and unfortunately there will always be extremists on the other side of the fence.
But what does it mean for the safety of people back here? That's what we're exploring in this hour, John.
I think, you know, in this country today, the safety of the people is very important, but also to safeguard them from the events in Iran. Unfortunately, you know, we have a multicultural country where we...
Why do you say unfortunately we have a multicultural country? Why is that unfortunately?
Because I think we've gone too far, and that's a separate topic in my mind altogether. You know, we've opened our borders, become too far relaxed. You know, England has lost its identity to a degree. You know, you yourself probably walk around London and seen, you know, lots of things that are good things.
Of course.
But equally, it's the bad things that often cause problems.
But I don't know that all the bad things can be put down to multiculturalism, John.
No, but that's not the point I'm making. But, you know, if you want to go...
The fact that we have groups of people who don't get on and we've not done enough to integrate them. Yes, I absolutely hear what you say there. Partly their fault, partly our fault. I absolutely buy that.
Correct.
You can't lay it all at the door of multiculturalism, can you, John, do you think?
No, but you can't. But some people just don't want to integrate.
No, and that's unfortunate. And by the way, I don't know how you force someone to integrate, but it's very unfortunate that they don't.
No, exactly. But they come to a certain country and they want to push their ideals onto the local populace. And by not integrating, they're just not becoming part of society.
I agree with that. And they're not benefiting from living in a tolerant Western country such as the United Kingdom. John, I have to go. Thank you. You have a safe weekend. Grateful for your input. Let's go to other matters and everything from drone strikes to hero pilots. Greeted Aggie Chambre, LBC's deputy political editor, when she went to the RAF base at Akrotiri in Cyprus, of course, reporting from there yesterday. In a whirlwind trip, she's sitting opposite me in the studio in Leicester Square. Well, you're getting around. You've got some air miles, haven't you? Tell us what you learnt from our Secretary of State for Defence. Aggie, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was an extraordinary 24 hours. We travelled with the Defence Secretary in an extremely small RAF jet to RAF Akrotiri. The base, of course, extremely quiet. Families there have been evacuated, and it is on really high alert because of that drone strike 5 days ago. While we were there, there was an alert, an air raid siren went off. We were driving at the time. The driver immediately said, we need to drive faster. You could sort of feel the tension immediately heighten, taken very, very quickly into shelter. And we were told later that other people were forced to go under desks. And it was quite quick. But basically, every time a ballistic missile goes from Iran sort of into the direction of Cyprus, they have to respond like that because of what has happened on Sunday. And someone said to me, this is just what life is like at the moment. There are, of course, extremely strong UK-Cypriot ties. The Treaty of Guarantee, which was signed more than 60 years ago, agreed Britain would take responsibility for the security of the island. That's effectively why we were there. Britain given sovereignty over these two RAF bases in return for security guarantees. And the drone that hit on Sunday was, it was low, it was slow, and it stayed undetected. And I was told while I was there that it could have been deadly if it had hit a room full of people. It would have turned that room into casualties instantly. That drone hit, but another drone was intercepted by a Hero pilot that we met on the airfield. So we spoke to the first pilot of the Royal Air Force's stealth fighter jet to destroy a target in combat. He destroyed two Iranian drones with an advanced short-range air-to-air missile, and military officials believe it was heading towards a hangar housing US spy planes. He described the incident as like training, said there was no euphoric sense of success, partly because I think he was worried it could have been a friendly target, and partly because he had to immediately turn around and see if there were any more out there. When he returned to base, he celebrated with one solitary Kia beer at sunrise, and he said he'll celebrate properly when this is over. Of course, this conflict did not come out of the blue. Some people suggesting the base had been readied since January, and John Healy too telling me they've been stepping up air defences in Cyprus for weeks.
He had already, weeks ahead of this conflict, already strengthened air defences here on the island of Cyprus, not just to defend this base and our British forces personnel, but the island of Cyprus and neighbouring ally countries. We put extra air defences and fast jets into Qatar as well to do the same thing. So leading a coordinated regional defensive operation that we expected would be needed and that we've flown and helped lead from day one of this conflict.
But Nick, I promised you yesterday morning
that
I would challenge the Defence Secretary.
Are you a woman who honours her promises?
I absolutely am.
Are you a deputy political editor who honours her promises?
Just about. That I would challenge the Defence Secretary on why HMS Dragon wasn't ready earlier and won't set sail until next week. Especially because people on the base were suggesting that he had been ready since January. Him saying himself, they'd been preparing for weeks. To which he responded, he defended against that criticism and said he himself was not annoyed that it was taking so long.
No, we're responding and I'm making decisions as things change, as we have to adapt the action that we're prepared to take. And I'm stepping up the air defences as we need to. So today we've got our top air defence planners coming into the island. They're going to help coordinating the ships and the systems that other allies are now starting to put into the area as well alongside the UK.
So circumstances change, apparently, yes. Nick. On the base, people on extremely high alert. They don't know what's going to happen next, and they, including John Healy, keen not to rule anything out. But Healy told me they will do everything they can to protect British lives and protect British bases when I asked how far the UK could be dragged into this conflict.
Aggie Chambray reporting, LBC's Deputy Political Editor, 7:28. Aggie, thanks for that report. Let's come back to events here in the UK. The government, using their words, quotes, reaching out, particularly to Jewish and to Muslim people. Lynn in Devon is furious. If the media and politicians gave 1/100th of time to hearing from, say, the Christian vicar of a country parish, as you, Nick, endlessly do to imams or rabbis, I would see more balance. This is a Christian country. Lynn, we're reacting to what the Prime Minister said, addressing our Muslim and Jewish friends. That's why. If he'd said we are reaching out to Christians, because in some way, I assure you, we would have gone, perhaps not to a country vicar, maybe to the Archbishop. But, Lynn, I hope you see the relevance. Sarah's in Greenwich. What do you want to tell me, Sarah? Good morning.
This is Saba. I'm an Iranian woman.
Sorry, I've got you. Saba. Is that S-A-B-A? Can you hear me? No, I think there's a problem. Can we find out what... And also, if we've got the name wrong, apologise. And let's get it right. Shane's in Ealing. Shane, you're on the radio. What can you tell me? Good morning.
How are you doing, Nick?
Hello.
I love your show, by the way. I actually called Tom Sobrick Nick by accident.
Oh, right. Quite right. Good. He deserves it.
Why I had you in the
mind. He is a tribute act anyway, old Tom, so there we go.
Yeah, I know. I enjoy your show, too, in fairness. But
are we doing enough to protect people?
We're not. Let's just. It's a bit rich when we're asking about protecting just specific communities when we can't actually police communities in general, like...
When we can't protect who? Sorry.
Communities in general.
Yes.
Like, in the UK, like, phone crime is through the roof.
Right.
Car crime's through the roof. I seen a thing on Sky News a couple of months ago that crime has actually affected our GDP growth.
Right. Well, certainly businessmen and women are choosing not to come to the United Kingdom, to London, I'm sorry, I don't know about the whole, to London in the same numbers because of what's seen to be the high crime. The Metro industry would say crime is under control, but I think they're cooking the books. I'm sure they're diddling the numbers, it doesn't make sense.
100%. I've actually been a victim of crime, and I had a good solution, but my company vehicle was stolen, but there was a tracker on it. We tracked it to the place where it was, but I got the police there, and they said they couldn't do anything because they couldn't prove that he actually stole it.
Well, I know about vehicle crime because I too lost my vehicle last year. We didn't ever find it, but we did a whole piece on that, and I know there is frustration. Shane, look after yourself. Stay safe. We're over time. We're getting a little bit off subject, but I wish you nothing but safety. Remember, we are looking. There's so much more of the conflict we will be looking at, I assure you. And we'll have more calls on that. Shane, stay safe. Coming up after the news.
In the words of one city economist, and so it begins, mortgage rates begin to climb in anticipation that interest rates will not be cut again. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
And an interesting view from Sir Lewis Hamilton on the eve of the start of the new, of course, Formula One Grand Prix season. A question from a South African journalist. As so many Grand Prix are in the Gulf, what could one possibly find its way to Africa?
That's what I want to see. Take it back from the French. Take it back from the Spanish. Take it back from the Portuguese and the British. It's so, so important for the future of that country and for that continent.
Well, it might be one of the most futuristic sports on the planet, but he's back in the days of the 17 and 1800s. The French and the Spanish and the British don't rule Africa. More like the Chinese now. We'll have more on that. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
The first government chartered flight bringing British nationals back from the Middle East has arrived at Stansted Airport. It was meant to depart the Omani capital, Muscat, on Wednesday, but was grounded by technical issues. The US Defence Secretary, Pete Hegseth, says American firepower over Iran will surge dramatically in a new phase of its military operation. Israel has launched a broad-scale wave of strikes on Iran and Lebanon overnight as the conflict enters a seventh day. Two British helicopters are due to arrive in Cyprus today to improve the island's protection from drones. The base RAF Akrotiri was struck on Sunday and targeted again on Monday. And in other news, the Labour MP Joni Reid has voluntarily suspended herself from the party after her husband was arrested on suspicion of spying for China. Miss Reid has stressed she's done nothing wrong but says she doesn't want to be a distraction for the government. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I can't say that I disagree with the Prime Minister. That there was no real plan, I think, is probably a good reason for Keir Starmer not to have got involved with the initial assault. Because I haven't heard from the Americans that there is a plan here for regional stability that means that, if we're going to be very selfish about it, you're not going to see your energy bill rise by 10% in the next few months, or your car be fueled by petrol that is going to cost an absolute fortune.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, it feels very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd quit my job and I'd finish my novel.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
So, what's the book called?
Neil, the Vampire Detective.
Sounds awful.
Who cares? I'm rich!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now from Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum again.
May Walkers stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays, backing your future.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Connect Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:35, back to the conversation about what events in the Middle East mean here in the UK in a moment. Let's get an update on the world of business. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, and already told us you're going to be talking a little bit about mortgages. Where are we with those? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, worth remembering when the Prime Minister said, as he did often, both in the House of Commons on Wednesday and in his Downing Street address yesterday, that people across the country are worried about the conflict in Iran. There are all sorts of reasons for that. One of which is going to be the potential consequences on people's domestic finances. And it's mortgages that are now under the magnifying glass. We have seen the first round of major lenders announce that they are going to be raising some of their rates. We heard from HSBC, NatWest, Nationwide and Coventry Building Society. Now, it's important to stress that the Bank of England has not raised interest rates. And so if you're on a tracker mortgage, that's going to reflect Bank of England base rate. And of course, if you're on a fixed term mortgage, then you can avoid some of this volatility. But for new mortgages, those rates are starting to go up. Just looking at the numbers, NatWest and Nationwide said that their fixed rate mortgages will rise by 0.25% from today. HSBC saying the same. Coventry Building Society telling customers, future customers, it was increasing all of its fixed rates for residential and buy-to-let mortgages from Monday. And everybody is pointing the finger of blame at the war in Iran and uncertainty. Now, this is all in expectation that either interest rates will not be cut in anything like the trajectory that they have been so far this year, or indeed, in the worst-case scenario, that they may in fact find that the Bank of England has to raise interest rates. Now, this is all hypothetical. It is all dependent on how long the conflict lasts, what the longer-term impact on particularly oil and gas prices would be, how that feeds through to inflation, and how that helps determine what the Bank of England does. So all of these things are connected. Extraordinary to draw a line from Tehran all the way to high street mortgage lenders, but that's the world we live in. So at the moment, this is all speculative, but banks, in the sort of complicated way in which they work out future interest rates for mortgages, are determining that there is now a chance that they either won't be cut or that they might even be raised at the Bank of England when the Bank of England meet again on the 19th of March.
All right. Let's get into the building sector. What's the issue there, Christian?
Well, it's a very long-running issue, Nick. The construction industry, which you and I have often discussed, is suffering its longest downturn as a sector since the 2008 financial crisis nearly 20 years ago. The latest S&P Global survey of the UK construction sector said that house building in particular is the major drag. And we measure these PMIs, these purchasing managers indexes, based on a score. Anything above 50 for a particular sector shows that there is expansion, there is growth in that sector, as there is now in the services sector, we saw from data this week. But in the construction sector, in January, the figure was at 46.4, which means it was shrinking, and it's been that way for a very long time. It has fallen most recently this week to 44.5, so that there's an acceleration in that. It's the 14th month in a row, in fact, that that reading has been below 50. So 14 months of contraction, effectively recession, in the construction sector, driven by house building, which is very weak. Now, some people have pointed out that there's been so much rain across the country this year that that has had an effect. And it's true. This being the 14th month of a contraction in the sector shows that there are other things at play here. It raises big questions about Labour's house building targets, which I think look pretty laughable at the moment. They need to be building over 300,000 homes a year to hit their target. They're not. Probably going to build just over 200,000 a year over the next couple of years. They say that they're working hard to change the planning system, but at the same time, they are imposing all sorts of regulations on house builders, which just make it harder and harder for people to get building off the ground. So it's another set of gloomy figures for the construction sector.
Christian, I'm going to leave it there because I want to move into the hospitality sector with a guest in the studio, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Thank you. Talk next week, 7:39. Now, I've mentioned the hospitality sector, and when it comes to London, there's few figures bigger than the man sitting opposite me. Jeremy King, a legendary London restaurateur. He founded the Ivy, the Wolsey. He's got the Arlington now, down by the Ritz, which is one of the hottest tickets in town, and I can vouch for that personally, as I've been there a couple of times. And he's just taken over Simpsons in the Strand. Jeremy King is in the studio. Jeremy, thank you for coming along. Simpsons in the Strand. I remember this from years ago. For listeners, just give us a potted history of how relevant and how big it once was on the London dining scene.
Well, it's one of the oldest. It's not the oldest. I think rules remains that way. 1828 it was originally formed, and like most of London institutions, strangely, as a coffee house. If you think of Lloyd's of London, Garrick Club, all these places were coffee houses. But it became famous for its clientele's obsession with chess. And back in the 19th century, the country in London was obsessed with chess, so much so that people would run with results, even moves with big games. And one of the things, I've been chasing Simpsons now for 25 years. I finally secured it in June last year after a four-year discussion. And one question that every day myself and Robert, who many people know as a partner, will be asked, will you be having the trolleys?
Yes.
And it's famous for its beef trolleys, which actually originated because when people were playing chess, they didn't want to stop for a full meal, so the trolleys would be brought round and beef would be cut off the side so people could effectively make a sandwich. And it is extraordinary. And most people think of Simpsons as really as the restaurant part, which is called the Grand Divan,
yeah.
Wood paneling, beef trolleys. But actually, it's two restaurants. There's a more affordable, bigger, lighter restaurant upstairs, which will be called Romano's in honour and celebrating the old Romano's on the Strand, which was bombed in the war, which used to be the preeminent restaurant. And it also has two bars, and I'm particularly keen to give the theatre world somewhere to call home, almost the bar downstairs, Dame Nellie's Tavern, after Nellie Melba, famous for toast and and peach Melba, somewhere almost like an unofficial clubhouse. It's the most exciting thing. It's the biggest thing I've ever done. And what's interesting, as you said earlier, I went there with my father, and that's the refrain I hear so much.
I went there. I can remember my late father tipping the man who cut the beef, I think a crisp pound note or something.
Absolutely.
That is tradition. You have to give a tip to the guy. Right, Jeremy, I've known you long enough. The way the hospitality sector is in this country, are you raving mad to take on such an ambition at this time? When I read that hospitality is really taking a battering, Jeremy.
Well, I disappointed somebody who was doing an interview for me for the Times about how this was the worst period for restaurants ever. And they were asking me, you're the veteran, have you ever seen it so bad? There was Brexit, COVID, taxes, rates, even as Olympic, people getting upset. I said, no, but by no means are the worst. The worst for me was the 70s and 80s. And my first managership, I stood outside a place in Chelsea and felt and heard the bomb that went off at Walton's.
Oh.
And that was a special bomb because we at that time had all our windows covered with grates. And the organisation which bombed it put a hook on a bomb and hang it off the grate. Now imagine a time when you'd go to a restaurant, either as an employee or a guest, and not know whether you're going to come home. That was much worse. I can deal with a bit of a Zempic after all that. And it carried on in the 80s. Do you remember they machine-gunned the Churchill Hotel? Scots was bombed twice, and so it went on. So, and yes, we've had crises in 98, economics, 2008. But one of the great things about the British, and particularly the restaurant business, was although we don't like change, which is a weakness and a strength, we're resilient. We adapt to it. And yes, there are an awful lot of things being thrown at us. You were mentioning earlier about William Sitwell.
Yes, now this is a piece in the Daily Telegraph a week or so ago in which he highlights the fact that we now have someone who's one of the Treasury's first entrepreneurship advisor, and the person involved, Alex Deplich, said in an interview that we don't need any more restaurants.
Well, in fairness to her, I mean, it's an inflammatory statement. In fairness, probably she's right, but the thing is that the William Blake quote I always love is that a truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies we can invent, and there's an element of that. I think Labour, and it pains me to say this, I'm not anti-Labour in any way, they are shooting themselves in the foot time and time again.
In what way, Jeremy?
Well, look at the VAT situation, and it's a lack of comprehension of pragmatic business-like behaviour, is that when we look at foreign visitors losing their VAT dispensation, I'm sure the figure is there, I have no idea what it was, how many billion pounds were being spent. So somebody says, let's say it's £10 billion. Oh, if we put VAT on that, we'll get an extra £2
billion.
But of course, they don't allow for the fact that commercially, they'll start selling £1 billion and they'll actually only get £200 million, but will have driven billions of pounds worth of business out of London, out of the country.
We've got to go to the news headlines. Final question. When, this landmark location on the London dining scene, when is it open for business?
Within soft openings now, the Grand Divan, it'll open in stages. The whole place will open Tuesday, and then Romano's, which I'm really excited about, will open in about two and a half weeks.
Best of luck to you and all the staff you will now employ, all the jobs you will hand out, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
Jeremy King, thank you. Look for the Arlington, already in business, Simpson and Strand, as of next week. 7:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The first government-chartered flight to bring Britons back from the Middle East has landed at Stansted Airport. The US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth says American firepower over Iran will surge dramatically in a new phase of its military operation against the country. And the Labour MP Joni Reid has voluntarily suspended herself from the party after her husband was arrested on suspicion of spying for China. LBC weather. Rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales. Sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems on the motorways this morning. Firstly, in Essex, on the M11, there are northbound queues of about 6 miles from Junction 8 at Bishop Stortford, heading towards Junction 9 at Saffron Walden. It's because of the emergency repair works, where only one lane is open. Also, problems on the M4 eastbound. There are delays from the M25 junction to Junction 4, and that's because a lorry overturned on the junction roundabout earlier this morning. There's still some debris and also some fuel spillage to clear as well, so that's why there's a delay back to the M25. And then on the M25, on the Kent stretch, there are severe delays anti-clockwise from Junction 3 at the M20 to the Dartford Tunnel because a car was on fire earlier.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like
You'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear all change, please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Lidl's garden season is a go! With new gardening gear every week, from potting and planting to outdoor furniture, 10 weeks from the 5th of March, we're just getting warmed up. Lidl, more to value.
While stocks last, selected stores, GB only, in-store from the 5th of the 3rd, 26.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before eight. Let's move away from our discussion of the world of business and get into the business of what's happening in the Middle East. Privileged to be joined by Justice Secretary, Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy, who joins me now. Much to discuss, but first off, if we can, Deputy Prime Minister, can you give us an update of the situation now and, of course, the involvement of both British military personnel and the safety of those Britons trying to get home? Morning to you, sir.
Well, let's start with the safety of those trying to get home, because you'll have many listeners who have friends, colleagues across the region, very pleased that that flight arrived from Amman this morning, finally, but also that staff were able to thank FCDO ground staff on the ground. We've had 6,500 people leave UAE. We've got rapid deployment teams from the FCDO across the region, and we are working with airlines where airspace opens up to get more people out, particularly from the UAE, more charter flights from Amman in the coming hours and days. But it will be dependent on airspace opening up. It will be dependent on safety. Of course, that's essential, and getting people through routes, also on road, is an issue. This is a big evacuation, far bigger even than Afghanistan.
Of those 6,500 people you referenced, Deputy Prime Minister, how many were on the government chartered aircraft?
I haven't got the numbers in front of me, Nick.
It's going to be a couple of hundred, isn't it? Two, 300.
Well,
approximately.
My understanding,
and it was 24 hours late, Deputy Prime Minister, because the pilot hadn't had the necessary rest period. How was that allowed to happen?
Well, I think that delays in a febrile circumstances can happen, and then you can't have a pilot fly over a certain amount of hours. So,
why wasn't that worked out in advance that he or she had the necessary break period, Deputy Prime Minister?
I think that that's what's happened. But, Nick, when I listened to those who had come off the plane, they were relieved, and they thanked staff, FCDO staff, for the support they put in on the ground. Although I accept, of course, waiting in Oman airport would not have been a great experience.
But Mr. Lammy, they were waiting on the aircraft as well. There were reports of people banging on the window, utter confusion, because they didn't know why they could take off, and they would feel rather vulnerable, stuck on an aircraft in the fringes of a war zone, not being told what was happening.
I do recognise that, but there are aviation rules. It is a febrile situation,
yes,
of course, with missiles. I do think that, as stressful as it would have been, that people seem to recognise that when they landed in Stansted. We will do everything we can to get people out as swiftly and as carefully as possible.
How many more flights, government chartered flights, are there planned for today or through the weekend, Deputy Prime Minister?
The Foreign Secretary updated us yesterday. There are flights planned, but we're careful because, of course, airspace can shut at any time. So I don't want to say a number, but there are charter flights that we hope, more charter flights in the coming days, that will leave from Oman.
And you cannot give me an idea of a number you're working towards? 4, 5, 6 by the, from here till Sunday night or whatever it might be?
You recognise that I'm not a Foreign Office Minister, but I am. I'm
Deputy
nervous.
Prime Minister,
Nick, I'm nervous about giving numbers because, you know, I say two, and then airspace shuts down and flights don't leave. Is the truth.
All my listeners would understand. Well, let's move to other matters if we can, and the level of preparedness. There is considerable criticism of the Prime Minister in that it wasn't until Tuesday we actually decided to deploy HMS Dragon, some 72 hours after the conflict. Why the delay, Mr. Lammy?
I think the first thing to say is that there was rapid deployment into pre-deployment into the region from January and February. That's why F-35s were in the region. That's why radar is in the region. We've got 400 personnel dealing with air defences across the region. HMS Dragon will be in the region in the coming weeks. That is not the only capability we have to protect air defences in Cyprus and across the Gulf.
But if you were deploying aircraft, military aircraft, why wasn't the ship readied?
Well, it's also the case that you, and I saw the Defence Secretary stressing this yesterday, you coordinate with allies. People may have forgotten that Cyprus is a NATO ally. That's why the French, the Germans are also sending frigates. This is an operation across the region. HMS Dragon is part of that operation, but it is not the only capability that the UK and our allies have.
What sort of look is it, Deputy Prime Minister? The French vessel, the Christobel Colon, is going to get there next week. 2 days later, the French Charles de Gaulle will get there. We've still got the welders on board HMS Dragon.
Look, I think that is an unfair assessment.
I've said is accurate.
Of our military capability, recognising that the Middle East at this time is fragile. And of course, as I've said, we've got 400 additional personnel dealing with air defences across the region. But let me just say, you will recognise that UK armed forces are not just deployed in the Middle East and the Eastern Mediterranean. There are other theatres of conflict where they are deployed across the world.
When Sir Keir Starmer is criticised for his, and I quote, indecision, prevarication and lack of preparedness, how do you respond as his deputy?
Well, I know, working with Keir Starmer, that he keeps a cool, calm head, that he has the full support of British capability, and that's not just our armed forces, it's also our intelligence capability, that he's keen to work with our European allies particularly, and the E3 was very important in the initial hours of this conflict. And of course, there'll be comment around the sides. There will always be comment in anything, but often people are commenting without the full information, is the truth.
The substance of international... Do you think is a breach of international law, what the US and Israel did, Deputy Prime Minister?
Well, that will be a matter for the US and Israel to answer. And, of course, there will be a debate amongst international legal lawyers. That is not for me today. We were very clear that we would not be involved in the offensive action, but we are involved in the defensive action, which has a legal basis.
Well, can we see that legal basis?
And I am content with that. Well,
can you publish that legal basis, just to allay the concerns of my listeners?
There was a summary made available at the point at which the Prime Minister stood up earlier in the week and made clear the legal basis on which we would be engaged in defensive action, but he was concerned about plan, understandably. But now, where there are British civilians, British armed forces across the region, of course we will do everything we can to keep them safe.
But surely this action is part of an ongoing conflict that's been raging since 1979 and therefore does not need further UN authorisation. It's also a preemptive self-defence permissible under Article 51 of the UN Charter, I read. That's the true legal advice, isn't it?
Well, that will come down largely to whether there was an imminent threat. What I can say is that as Foreign Secretary, I sat down with the Iranians on many occasions. I challenged them on uranium enrichment in their country. I'm afraid the answers that I received were not satisfactory to me or my French and German colleagues that I was sitting down with at the time. It was not satisfactory to the US, and I updated Marco Rubio about this following a meeting last year. That is the basis on which the Americans and the Israelis have sought to act. It is for them to defend and to explain their legal basis, not for me.
Is it correct, reports suggest, that it was your colleague Ed Miliband who led the resistance to allowing US deployment of our bases?
It would not be right for me to comment on NSC meetings, but I would say that the cabinet is completely united, as you would expect.
That's not what reports say, Mr. Lammy. They say Ed Miliband led a sort of splinter group. Do you recognise that?
Where we are putting our armed forces, where our armed forces are concerned, the cabinet is completely united in this defensive action, the legal basis to act, and in the calm, steady approach that's required at this time.
Can you see a time in which offensive strikes would be authorised by the British government?
Well, the truth is that at this time, there are ballistic missiles being directed at us, and we are able to defend ourselves legally. It is for those on the ground operationally to make the assessment of how, when, what, and why. But of course, the UK government and I, as Deputy Prime Minister, fully support them in that action. And it's important that our soldiers know that they are absolutely underpinned by a legal basis to act.
How far does our support of President Trump go?
Well, of course, we work very closely with our...
Well, the relationship is rather shattered at the moment, Deputy Prime Minister.
Look,
I know you enjoyed a good personal relationship when you were last in Washington with him. I remember you telling me about this on LBC, but he talks about how he's disappointed, how it's not the Churchillian spirit of days of old. That's the reality as President Trump sees it, Deputy Prime Minister.
I actually read a New York Times interview where he also added that the Prime Minister's a good man and he works with him very well. Look, the rhetoric is intense. We have a special relationship because of our military intelligence capability, because of the trillion pounds, dollars we have invested in each other's economies. We have the closest of relationships. But from time to time, of course, whether it's Roosevelt and Churchill over the approach to Stalin, whether it's Wilson and LBJ over Vietnam, good friends can also have differences of approach. And it's right that we only put our soldiers into a war context where it is defensive and where there's a legal basis to act.
One last final question, if we can, taking you away from conflict, Deputy Prime Minister. It is reported that there is a growing backlash from some of your colleagues from Labour MPs over your senior colleague Shabana Mahmood's crackdown on asylum and the plan perhaps to pay people £40,000, up to £40,000, if they leave within 7 days. Does that plan, does Shabana Mahmood have your full unstinting support, Mr. Lammy?
Well, look, I think a lot of your listeners will be concerned that if you're housing asylum seekers, it's £158,000 a year to house them in an asylum hotel.
But that's £430 a day, Deputy Prime Minister. That's like, would you put them in the Ritz?
It's £158,000 to house them in an asylum hotel.
I know, that's £430 a day.
Well, I imagine it's because sometimes we're talking about quite large families. On that basis, this is a pilot. It's a pilot copying what has been happening in Denmark. They have huge success in Denmark in sending people back. 95% hit rate they have in Denmark. Okay. I think the pilot is a good idea.
Are you, has your full support, Deputy Prime Minister?
Absolutely.
Grateful for your time today. Thank you. Full update there on events there in the Middle East and, of course, the UK military involvement from Justice Secretary, Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy. Taking us to 2 minutes after 8 on LBC. Let's get the headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the first government-chartered flight bringing British nationals back from the Middle East has landed in the UK. It was meant to depart from Oman on Wednesday night, but was grounded by technical problems. More than 140,000 people have told the Foreign Office they want help to leave the region. The Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, has just told Nick efforts are being ramped up to get more people home.
We've got rapid deployment teams from the FCDO across the region, and we are working with airlines where airspace opens up to get more people out, particularly from the UAE, more charter flights from Oman in the coming hours and days. But it will be dependent on airspace opening up. It will be dependent on safety. This is a big evacuation, far bigger even than Afghanistan.
Mr. Lammy also insisted to LBC that he's not embarrassed by the UK's response to the crisis in the Middle East. The government's been criticised in recent days for failing to have new defence measures in place to protect RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus. The base was struck by a drone on Sunday and targeted again on Monday. Two Wildcat helicopters are due to arrive in Cyprus today to improve the island's protection from drones. The Israeli military has launched new missile strikes at Tehran overnight, as well as Iran-backed Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Iran has continued to retaliate against US assets across the Gulf. The US Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, said the amount of American firepower is about to surge dramatically.
Our stockpiles of defensive and offensive weapons allow us to sustain this campaign as long as we need to. Our capabilities, we have only just begun to fight. If you think you've seen something, just wait. The amount of combat power that's still flowing, that's still coming, that we'll be able to project over Iran is a multiples of what it currently is right now.
President Trump has said he must be personally involved in picking Iran's new leader. Mr. Trump has ruled out the idea of working with the late Supreme Leader's son, who is widely expected to succeed him. One other story for you this morning. The Labour MP Joni Reid has voluntarily suspended herself from the party after her husband was arrested on suspicion of spying for China. David Taylor has been released on bail after being arrested on Wednesday. Ms. Reid has stressed she's done nothing wrong but says she doesn't want to be a distraction while investigations take place. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,413. It closed down 153 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You want to keep personal stuff personal? Grab the unrivaled Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra with an incredible privacy display on EE, the UK's best network. You can trade in your old device and save. Plus, you can get 512 gigabytes for the price of 256. Pre-order the Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra on EE. Offer ends 10th of March.
Eligibility, credit check and terms apply. Credit by EE Limited. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 6 minutes after eight on Friday, March the 6th. Coming up in this hour, we will go back to the level of preparedness, or I would say lack of preparedness, that means that the French ship gets closer, the Spanish ship is almost there, the Greeks are there, and we've still got the welders on board HMS Dragon. We'll look at how on earth that can happen. In other political matters, the leader of the Conservatives at City Hall, Susan Hall, accusing Green Party leader Zach Polanski of laughing at the desecration of Winston Churchill's statue, you may recall that recently, with pro-Palestinian graffiti.
We will have things damaged in our beautiful city, and you're laughing. I'm glad, Zach, that you find this amusing. Because actually, most of the public will not find this amusing.
And we'll find out if that's the reality. Surely something like that is no laughing matter. Back to more central government affairs. My exchange yesterday with Border Security Minister Alex Norris over whether the government would proscribe the IRGC, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps.
We can't proscribe them under current terror legislation because there's a gap in terror legislation. So the independent reviewer said
but
that we should...
you are the lawmakers. Yeah,
and we're going to close the gap. We've committed to doing that.
Yet more hiding behind legislation, international law, whatever it might be. And Lewis Hamilton, on the eve of the Formula One Grand Prix season kicking off, calling for the people of Africa to take their countries back from the British, the Portuguese, other European nations. He might have a very fast car, but he's stuck back in the 1700s and 1800s.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I tried to explore the lack of preparedness of the Royal Navy and other military aspects with David Lammy. Whether I got any further is doubtful. The destroyer deployed to protect Cyprus has been delayed now as they need to finish off the welding. Al Khans, the defence minister, said HMS Dragon would not leave Portsmouth until engineers had finished a variety of different bits of maintenance. His words, not mine. Understandably, the government has been criticised over the delay of getting what's called a Type 45 destroyer down to protect Cyprus and that region following the attack on RAF Akrotiri 72 hours ago. No, more than 74, 4 days ago now, back on Sunday. 5 days ago on Sunday. 5 days ago. 72 hours that the ship was decided to be deployed. 5 days since it... I mean, it is... quite extraordinary, the set of affairs. Now, they can't get Dragon down there. HMS Duncan was the only other ship available for the mission on Tuesday, but that apparently is having routine maintenance after taking part in an exercise off Wales last month when it had problems with one of its guns. You think that's bad? We have four other Type 45 destroyers in the Royal Navy. They're all undergoing maintenance, three having long-term works, and a fourth, HMS Dauntless, receiving maintenance to return it to full operational capabilities. Two of them, I can't believe I'm reading this, two of them are not able to sail there because they proved unreliable in the hotter waters of the Mediterranean and the Gulf. So this is the once undoubtedly great, and I please, if you or your loved ones, your children or whatever serve in the Royal Navy, this is no criticism of the men and women brave enough to serve, I assure you. But that is the reality. I've just run through. Some of them can't sail because the water's too hot, and another one, the gun doesn't work. Now, within the last few minutes, of course, you'll have heard Deputy Prime Minister and Justice Secretary David Lammy here on LBC, and I asked him why it took until Tuesday to make the decision to send HMS Dragon, which is still tied up.
I think the first thing to say is that there was rapid deployment into pre-deployment into the region from January and February. That's why F-35s were in the region. That's why radar is in the region. We've got 400 personnel dealing with air defences across the region. HMS Dragon will be in the region in the coming weeks. That is not the only capability we have to protect air defences in Cyprus and across the Gulf.
But if you were deploying aircraft, military aircraft, why wasn't the ship readied?
Well, it's also the case that you, and I saw the Defence Secretary stressing this yesterday, you coordinate with allies. People may have forgotten that Cyprus is a NATO ally. That's why the French, the Germans are also sending frigates. This is an operation across the region. HMS Dragon is part of that operation, but it is not the only capability that the UK and our allies have.
What sort of look is it, Deputy Prime Minister? The French vessel, the Christobel Colon, is going to get there next week. 2 days later, the French Charles de Gaulle will get there. We've still got the welders on board HMS Dragon.
Look, I think that that is an unfair assessment.
I've said is accurate.
Of our military capability, recognising that... the Middle East at this time is fragile, and of course, as I've said, we've got 400 additional personnel dealing with air defences across the region. But let me just say, you will recognise that UK armed forces are not just deployed in the Middle East and the Eastern Mediterranean. There are other theatres of conflict where they are deployed across the world.
When Sir Keir Starmer is criticised for his, and I quote, indecision, prevarication and lack of preparedness, how do you respond as his deputy?
Well, I know, working with Keir Starmer, that he keeps a cool, calm head, that he had the full support of British capability, and that's not just our armed forces, it's also our intelligence capability, that he's keen to work with our European allies particularly, and the E3 was very important in the initial hours of this conflict. And of course, there'll be comment around the sides. There will always be comment in anything, but often people are commenting without the full information is the truth.
David Lammy. Now, of course, military and defence matters are very much in the focus for us currently, but let's turn to someone who always has their focus on these affairs. Dan Sabba is Defence and Security Editor at The Guardian, joins me now. Dan, what are you learning about the state of our preparedness, about the MOD, and anything else you might, because you're the expert in the field over the last 6 days. Good morning.
Well, look, I think we've I think what we've learned, and I think you described it well, the whole saga with deploying a warship, to the British warship, Royal Navy warship, to the Eastern Mediterranean, it's all rather embarrassing, isn't it? Britain somewhat behind. Of course, it'll take a certain number of days for a ship to set sail from Portsmouth, though it's extraordinary that none seem to be immediately available. And as you say, it looks like the welders are even on board. But the point is that this was a crisis that was very much foreseen. You know, all of us in the media, you know, it was widely talked about in the media and in diplomatic circles. The Americans were building up forces, both in the Arabian Sea, all around Iran and the Arabian Sea, and in the Eastern Mediterranean. And it was always going to be likely, it was always expected there was going to be some Iranian retaliation, and there was always going to be a possibility that Akrotiri could be attacked. And so why not send a warship down there, one that's capable of dealing with the threat from drones, and would have helped better protect the base and British interests there and our allies like Cyprus?
We'd better wind back a little bit, Dan. Of course, this government has only been in power for roughly 20 months, give or take. They inherited a situation 14 years with almost totally conservative or conservative-led administration. How much are Labour carrying the can for that, Dan?
Well, things take a long time in defence. In truth, I think we've seen just a sort of long decline in defence spending after the end of the Cold War. So we're really going back to the 1990s, actually, even to the Labour government before the 14 years of the Conservatives. But that was it was very enthusiastically carried on under the Conservative years. And defence spending fell, and it was an opportunity to spend more on health, on education. But we are in a more uncertain world, so we're going to have to, defence spending is going to rise, and that's fine. But for that spending to come through, you don't see the benefit until the 2030s. You know, we are where we are now, but none of that matters really. In this case, you know, Britain has a small armed forces, but the point is to think ahead and to anticipate what is coming. And what should have been anticipated was there would be a need for just a bit more deterrence and reassurance in the Eastern Mediterranean. And even if Britain's navy is constrained, you know, there should have been a destroyer on hand in the region ready to deal with things rather than one arriving, you know, so late that, well, who knows, this war could be over by then.
Let's hope. Lastly, Dan, currently I understand we're at 2.3% GDP on military spending. What is the time? Do we actually have set timeline to try and get it up further to the figure that we are trying to attain?
There are set timelines. It's sort of 2.5, 2.6%, I think it'll be by 2027. And there's a longer-term timeline, although there are no Treasury costumes. There's a longer-term NATO timeline again to 3.5% by 2035. So we will, in theory, you'll see even more spending in the next parliament. But at the moment, you know, the UK is at a relatively low base and taking a long time to rebuild.
Grateful for your time as ever, Dan. Good to hear from you. Dan Savard, Defence and Security Editor at The Guardian. Before I come to your calls, just throw out this idea from Kemi Badenoch, who wants to scrap the two-child benefit cap. She says that will save £3.2 billion a year. And, says Kemi Badenoch, half of that would be spent towards defence spending. So, question for you, two-child benefit cap goes over £1.5 billion into the MOD budget, possibly to buy one battleship, I don't know, probably coming at that rate, I should talk. Is that something you'd support? We'll come to that after this. 8:16 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Deputy Prime Minister has told LBC that efforts are being ramped up to get people home from the Middle East as the first government chartered flight arrives back in the UK. David Lammy has also told Nick that he's not embarrassed by the UK's response to deploy defensive assets to help during the crisis. And four people have been arrested as part of a counter-terrorism policing investigation into suspected national security offences. LBC weather, rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales, sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. These severe delays on the M11 do continue northbound up from Junction 8 at Bishop Stortford, heading towards Junction 9 at Saffron Walden. It's slow for about 6 miles because of the emergency works. Also, queues on the M1 going southbound to Junction 10 at Luton Airport after an accident. There are restrictions on the M4 eastbound at Junction 4 because a lorry overturned earlier this morning, and there are delays back to the M25. Long delays on the North Circular Road westbound at the Cooks Ferry Interchange at Chingford after an accident. In Clapton, the Lea Bridge Road is closed eastbound, and that's also after an accident. And no Northern Line running between Charing Cross and Battersea Power Station.
This is LBC.
Go from bucket list to booked with EasyJet. Get package holidays from £319 per person and flights from £32 one way. So stop dreaming, stop scrolling, stop umming and ahhing. Book now at EasyJet.com and get your holiday sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates and flights April to September. Limited availability. Holidays after protected. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8. Goodness me. Once our Navy ruled the waves, now we have a government that won't waive the rules. See what I did there? Took a bit of thinking, didn't it? And well, I'd rather hide behind international law. Anne's in Bishop Stortford. Anne, your take on this. It's a bit embarrassing for our so-called senior service, isn't it? Good morning. Well, not for the men and women in it. Good morning.
Good morning, Anne. Sorry, good morning, Nick. Thank you. Thank you for what you do.
Oh, Lord.
I have to say, I was in tears hearing about this. Not just hearing about this, but learning about this further. My father served in the Second World War on Hermes and ended up as a naval officer at HMS Excellent.
How fantastic. You must be very proud of what he did.
Well, I am immensely proud. Now, what I've got to say is, I mean, I have ended up in tears. He's no longer with us.
Right.
I dearly wish he was. But if he heard this, his gust and his anger at this would kill him.
Why would he feel it so keenly, Anne?
Because he was so proud of the Royal Navy. I mean, I've never learnt. He never said a word, except a couple of amusing statements about what he did. But now I'm beginning to learn. I only recently have worked out he was involved with sending out boats, whatever they were, to the landings in France. I never knew this much. And as I say, everything was with him. Everything was done, and it was done properly. Anybody in the Navy will know. If he said jump, said how high.
I think you and I are possibly roughly of similar sort of generation. My late father served, although not at the same level as your dad. What does this do for the standing of the United Kingdom, do you think, globally?
Oh, I think it's appalling. We were once respected as having, you know, pretty much the best of everything, and people looked to the UK. Did they do it? And we were so proud. But just to see HMS Dragon sitting there, not ready.
No.
And anyway, how safe does that make you feel and everybody else feel in the UK?
You're absolutely right. Memories of your dear departed and hugely successful late father, Anne, thank you. We do have a government now that cannot get a battleship ready and can't even get an aircraft off the ground in time because they hadn't given the pilot enough rest. And the Deputy Prime Minister didn't even know how many people were on board. Let's look it up and get the number ourselves. It'll be somewhere in the region of 200 to 300. And they were left, reportedly, banging on the windows, some of them, banging on the windows in panic because they weren't told what was going on. Imagine you're stuck on an aircraft in a fairly hostile zone, and you can't get off the aircraft. I mean, it's bad enough being stuck in a hotel or an airport, but at least you can move about a bit. You're sitting and no one is telling you why you're not taking off. No one comes on. Eventually, it is reported the ambassador did come on aircraft and apologise. And this is what... So we can't get a battleship down, we can't get an aircraft up in the ground. HMS Dragon is the only ship we're preventing from crossing the channel. Dinghies come and go as much as you like. A battleship, no, we can't get 22 miles across the channel yet. Extraordinary. We'll return to that conversation. But to other stories... Oh, in fact, I just want to read this. Thank you to David, who gives a historical perspective. What a shambles. In 1982, this is David points out, Argentina invaded the Falkland Islands on the 2nd of April 1982. The British government decided almost immediately to send a naval force. The first ships of the British task force sailed on the 5th of April 1982. They had 3 days to assemble and begin deployment. God forbid these two failed lawyers are anywhere near the reins of this country ever again. I think you refer to Messrs. I'm so sorry, Sakir and Mr. Lammy. We'll come back to that, Martin. You'll be the next caller. Let's go to other matters. And, well, for many of you, disturbing story emanating from City Hall and the claims that Zach Polanski, the Green Party leader, voted against a motion welcoming the removal of the former Iranian leader, the Ayatollah, who was killed last Saturday, but also reportedly laughing and refusing to condemn the vandalism of the Sir Winston Churchill statue in Parliament Square recently. Well, here's the moment concerning that. Leader of the Conservatives at City Hall, Susan Hall, accusing Polanski of laughing.
I'm looking at you and you obviously don't see that there's an issue here. And that, you don't. And I tell you what, that is the most frightening thing. The fact that you think that it is acceptable for people to go around damaging our statues, knowing that it's criminal. I'm glad, Zach, that you find this amusing. Because actually, most of the public will not find this amusing.
Susan Hall, leader of the Conservatives at the Greater London Assembly, joins me now. Susan Hall, it's fair to say that a lot of people, the Greens, came to prominence around this time exactly a week ago with their success at that by-election. It's a party that you and a leader that you have been encountering for some time. Tell the listeners what they need to know about their stance on this particular position. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think it shows the Greens up for what they are, quite frankly. They know it's illegal to damage statues. They know it's wrong to damage statues. But they, one of the Green members, Zoe Garbett, stood up and gave a great long speech as to why it was perfectly acceptable. More or less, if it's a cause that you believe in, you can more or less do what you like. And yet they know it's unacceptable. I was flabbergasted by their response because everybody assumed it would be a unanimous vote. It was basically saying we condemn what happened to the statue, and we were asking Sadiq Khan to make sure that security in Westminster is sufficient enough to stop all our statues being damaged. I mean, that's basically what it was. And they come out with this drivel. I hope people start to realise that actually the Greens have gone from being cuddly, genuine environmentalists to something much, much worse. It's acceptable.
What did you actually see, Susan Hall? Because obviously I wasn't there, you were.
No, fair enough.
You saw him laugh, did you, Susan?
Yes, I did, absolutely. He was talking to the other two Green members, and he was laughing, which is why I then commented on it. There's no question I was there, I was looking straight at him, and he was laughing.
And having upbraided him, did he appear chastened in any way after you upbraided him?
No. No, they don't. They think they're absolutely in the right, and that's the frightening thing. They cannot see what's wrong with these activists throwing paint over everything, damaging things,
Well, I mean, ultimately, then lastly, they laugh at criminal damage. That's the
fact. Yes, and we'd all said in the chamber that it's illegal. But, you know, it's water off a duck's back. I hope people see this for what it is. This is the Greens. This is what they think. If they believe in a cause, then nothing matters.
Susan Hall, grateful for your time. Thanks for taking the call. Leader of the Conservatives on the Greater London Assembly, highlighting Mr. Polanski. And I'm not there. I wasn't there. I have to take a word. If Mr. Polanski is listening, or anybody else who was there or wants to call in, absolutely take your call, even if it needs to be in the middle of a news bulletin, because I'm very keen to clear the other side of the story. But there's certainly been no challenge, and this story has been running in more than one newspaper, and there's no suggestion from the Greens that it's wrong. Now, whatever you think about the whole situation in Iran and the US involvement and the Israel involvement and the level of UK involvement, to laugh at criminal damage, whether it's a statue of Winston Churchill, Nelson Mandela, Women at War, Edith Cavell, I don't care which statue, it is criminal damage, and you just do not treat that as a matter of derision. Do you? We might take calls on that. Update, grateful to one of my colleagues, around 400 people were on that government chartered flight. So of the five, 400 people on board. Oh, hang on, so there's confusion now. Right, so it's reported that 400 people were on board, but only 80 people got off the plane? So... Oh, right, now I've got it. So it had capacity for 400. Now we're getting there. So it had capacity for 400, but it's believed only 80 boarded. And do you remember we were told... this is even worse. So let's back up a little. So yesterday we were told that they had trouble getting the passengers on the plane, which you would think, oh, my God, everyone is swarming to get on. The plane had a capability or capacity of 400. It is thought only 80 got on. By the time they got on, the pilot was over his or her hours and had to, quite rightly, I'm not suggesting you can't break the law and have a pilot take off and try and pilot an aircraft if she's tired. And we have the government telling us 6,500 people have been they've been taken by Oman Air and Emirates. It's around 80. That's the reality. Right, got it. OK, we might return to that. Martin, yes, 8:28, let's get another call. Martin's in Belfast. Martin, the state of the senior service. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I previously served in the Royal Navy.
Did
and
you?
For a long time, like over a decade, it's been known that the Type 42s weren't fit for purpose. They were unable to go to hot water climates. Sometimes they even had to be towed back out of the Gulf.
What happens then to the vessel when it's in hot water? Why can't it function properly?
It was an issue with the coolant system. I think the people who built the ship said, well, we got the spec of the vessel. It was supposed to operate northern waters, you know, up around Murmansk and North Atlantic. So,
and do they? And is it fair? Do you need different cooling systems? Is that, or could one if properly built, could one vessel serve in both theatres?
Yeah, absolutely. I served in Type 22 frigates that were in the Gulf Patrol, and we used to work up off Murmansk in different places. But I think Keir Starmer knows the predicament he is. That's why he didn't want to say, yeah, we'll send ships, we'll do this, because they haven't got them. They've only got about 8 destroyers and 8 frigates, and most of both of those, like you said earlier, are all either in long refit or extended refit. And the vessel, the Dragon, she probably hasn't even got any ammunition aboard, so that will be another thing she'll have to get done before she goes down there.
How long does it take to get all the necessary kit and obviously food and goodness knows what else and crews? How long typically does that take?
Well, when I was in, they used to have a SCS-1, SCS-2. So SCS-1 was an on-call vessel that had to be at 24 hours notice to deploy anywhere in the world.
Right.
SCS-2 was 48 hours. They've done away with all that. So if you can imagine, the boats will be sitting maybe with peacetime munitions on it for practice firing and that, but you have to go to an ammunition buoy to go to war scenario, and they may be finding it difficult to get war scenario ammunition, missiles, and test the guns and missile systems before they even get there.
How many years were you in the Navy then, Martin?
9 years. I left in 95.
What do you make of it now, when you look at it now, the Royal Navy?
Honestly, they couldn't sustain a war against a small nation for more than 1 or 2 weeks. And everyone knows that. The nuclear deterrent, the last 2 times it went, I mean, the missile system failed. They couldn't even launch. So we have nothing. And anyone that's in the know knows. And I think Kimmy Badenoch and that saying, oh, we need to get out there, we need to send more ships. We haven't got them, Nick.
Martin, thank you for your service. Thank you for your call. We must move on. Look after yourself this weekend. Coming up after the news, my exchange with Border Security Minister Alex Norris. Will the government proscribe the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps?
We can't proscribe them under current terror legislation because there's a gap in terror legislation. So the independent review has said that we should...
But you are the lawmakers. Yeah,
and we're going to close the gap. We've committed to doing that.
Labour grandee David now, Lord Blunkard, on that after this. 8:32, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, and LBC News Time, Dominic Ellis.
The Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy has told LBC that efforts are being ramped up to get people home from the Middle East. The first government chartered flight bringing nationals back from the region landed in the UK overnight. More than 140,000 people have told the Foreign Office they want help to leave the region. David Lammy has also told Nick that he's not embarrassed by the UK's response to the Iran conflict.
The government's been criticised in recent days for failing to have new air defences in place to protect RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus. The base was struck by a drone on Sunday and targeted again on Monday. One other story, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. They're accused of spying on locations and people linked to the Jewish community in London. Counter-terror officers made the arrests in Barnet and Watford this morning. LBC weather, rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
Who's in charge of the British government? Is it Keir Starmer or Ed Miliband? And one of America's most senior senators tells us he still has no idea what the war aims are in Iran.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Wow.
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo! Woo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job. Your first love. Your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our first drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search First Drive Weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:35, back to the level of preparedness, or many would argue lack of level of preparedness in just a moment, but to a related story, and the Prime Minister being urged to launch a crackdown on Iranian-backed student groups, cultural centres and charities from a former Labour Home Secretary. Indeed, a Labour grandee, David Now, Lord Blunkett, who joins me. What is it we need to see from the PM, Lord Blunkett? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Nice to be back with you.
Good to have you on.
Yeah, we need to prescribe the Revolutionary Guard. There are all kinds of arguments going on about which part of it, which is the military, which is the spying. You just heard the story, four people arrested in London. I suspect they're linked to the Revolutionary Guard, I can't be sure. Prescribing the organisation would make it much easier for the police and the security services to take action, because it's much easier to actually be able to show that these people are linked to the Revolutionary Guard than it is much of the difficulty in showing that someone's a spy. And in that way, we could have them arrested and either imprisoned or thrown out of the country. But it's a no-brainer, and it was a no-brainer before the incursion and the bombing by Israel and the US, and it's, I think it's unanswerable now.
I have put this to Yvette Cooper, the Foreign Secretary, who said she was very keen on it when serving as Home Secretary, but it has to go through the due legal process. How valid a defence is that in your view, Lord Blunkett?
It is a defence, and of course she had her fingers burnt when she was Home Secretary, in prescribing Palestine action and all the events that occurred after it. I think the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is a slam dunk. I don't think it is like Palestine action. I know no one that I would want to be associated with defend the Revolutionary Guard at all, and that would apply to those who are deeply committed to the Palestinian cause.
You've written a foreword for a new report by Labour Friends of Israel. What does the Labour government need to take from the conflict and the positioning of the UK currently, Lord Blunkett?
Well, the report draws down on government evidence, including the person who's in charge of reviewing this area, that's Jonathan Hall, QC, and using the evidence in the pamphlet and the material that the government have already got, 20 different incidents that can be linked to the Revolutionary Guard and to the Iranian regime, I think it provides sufficient evidence. Shabana Mahmood, who is the current Home Secretary, is very tough. We heard her yesterday making, I thought, a very brave speech, and I've written in The Independent about it overnight. But on this one, I think she's just got to bite the bullet and say to the officials, whatever the procedures and processes, they've gone on long enough.
Lord Blunkett, a very brief, brave speech from Shabana Mahmood. Is it also an accurate and correct position for her?
It is. I'd like her to build into the future programme what I called earned entitlement. That is, that those who come here who are assessed to be a genuine asylum seeker should, as they remain and their cases reassessed on a 2.5 year regular basis, they should be able to earn the entitlement to stay. In other words, their contribution to the community, the fact that they don't commit crime, the fact that they're not dependent on the state, all those things should be taken into account. I think that way we could square the circle of those who have a genuine worry that if somebody's been in this country for very many years, perhaps up to 20 years, and they're not clear that they're allowed to go for naturalisation, then their children and the community around them are massively disadvantaged as well as them.
The necessary battleship still tied up at Portsmouth with welders on board. The Prime Minister accused of indecision, prevarication and lack of preparedness. How fair in your view, Lord Blunkett?
Well, I think it's fair to question the Foreign Office and the MOD. I've got a great deal of time for both the Foreign Secretary and the Defence Secretary. But I just wonder where the civil service were and where the heads of service were when the build-up by the US was taking place, and it was becoming more obvious by the day that the two countries that have bombed Iran were going to take action, and that we might be dragged, in one way or another, we might be dragged into it. So, you know, it's always deeply embarrassing when you're intent on sending, I mean, we've already got warships, we've got aircraft out there already, and they've been shooting down missiles, but to have one ship that's named and it can't get out of harbour, I mean, whatever the government, whatever your politics, that's embarrassing.
Lord Blunkett, the initial position from the Prime Minister as regards our relationship with the United States, that is that we were not allowing use of our bases then to be allowed for defensive purposes only, the right line to take?
Well, we're in the right place. We're allowing the bases
to be used. We're in the right place now, David?
We're in the right place. And if I were the Prime Minister, I would have wanted to have been part of the decision-making rather than dragged in. You've got a big choice here, and it's a difficult one, because your instincts would be to back the US and the Israelis in taking action against Iran. Why wouldn't you? Your immediate thought would then be, but hang on, am I just a cipher? Did I have any connection, engagement? Did I have any say in this? And if I didn't, then would I join in? I mean, that's what we'd think in our normal lives, wouldn't we?
Yes.
If somebody takes action and then says, why didn't you join me? And you say, because you never engaged me, I think there's a reasonable argument.
How far do we support Donald Trump?
We support him when it's in Britain's interest to do so, and where action's being taken that makes the world a great deal safer. And it's that latter point that we should be concentrating on.
Lastly, reminding my audience that you served in a high position in a British government which was involved in warfare of sorts. What do you think happens next in Iran? What do you hope happens with Iran?
What happens next was the big mistake we made over 20 years ago. I voted to take action alongside the US in Iraq. We had a vote of parliament. We had enormous debate around it. People afterwards then changed their minds, partly, in fact, for many, mostly, because of the inadequate planning of what comes next. And that stopped action in Syria over 10 years ago, and that's what's worrying people now. And you don't hear it from me, you hear it from the United States. Nobody is absolutely clear what the plan is, what the next steps are, what Donald Trump's actual aims are. We know what the Israelis' aims are. It's to absolutely crush the regime and replace it. The question is, how?
Look after yourself, Governor. Thanks as ever. David, now Lord Blunkett, former Home Secretary, who writes the foreword for Labour Friends of Israel, Unleashing Hell, Time to Ban Tehran's Terror Army. Isn't it good to hear it? Politician is just unequivocal. Yes, Bannon. Yeah, there is. I've got some sympathy. It has to go through the process, and she did get her fingers burnt before, but that doesn't stop them doing it now. Just refreshing, isn't it? 8:43. Simon in Basingstoke has been hanging on for an hour. My apologies. You want to talk about what we take from once the dust settles on this conflict, whenever it does. What do we need to learn from it? Simon, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, there's a lot of things we should consider. Firstly, that they're not actually battleships. They're air defence destroyers,
right.
The Type 45s. We were originally going to order 12. That was reduced to 6.
That was Tony Blair.
Their main purpose is to defend our two Queen Elizabeth-class aircraft carriers.
Neither of which are in service at the moment.
Yeah, the state of the Royal Navy is truly dreadful. Your earlier caller mentioned the issues with the engine systems, which is a new innovative engine system, which is so innovative they had to strip it out and completely refit the ships with new engines. And that's why they spent so much time in port. I think one of them spent over 800 days in port. And these are expensive. They're over £1 billion each. But the issue the UK has is we also don't have the shipbuilding capacity that we used to have. So we recently did a deal with Norway to sell them Type 26 frigates.
Oh, that's right. I remember that was lauded, that deal. Yes, absolutely, sir.
Well, that was lauded, but the fact is that now the government is saying, well, what we'll do is we're going to give the Norwegians some of the frigates that were originally intended for the Royal Navy. And the number of frigates we have is ridiculously low. 300 ships have to dock each day in the UK just to maintain our economy. And I doubt the Royal Navy could escort even one convoy of 30 ships.
That's how depressing it's got. Simon, thank you for your input on that. Karen, you will be the next caller. I promise I will do some of the emails and the texts that are coming in. I've been a little slow on that, but it's been a busy morning, and we're finding stuff out as we go along, aren't we? We're really the shambolic state of that supposed UK government charter flight out of the area. We'll come to other matters in the next hour. Grand Prix season about to kick off. Sir Lewis Hamilton replied to a question from a South African journalist. Now, of course, there are a number of Grand Prix that take place in that region, and they are looking for other sites. They'll probably come to European sites. It is written. I have no idea. But what about one day a return to Africa for the sport?
That's what I want to see. Take it back from the French. Take it back from the Spanish. Take it back from the Portuguese and the British. It's so, so important for the future of that country and for that continent.
Sir Lewis Hamilton taking us back to the 17 days of the 1700s, suggesting that Africa is still owned by the French, British and the Portuguese. You could argue, stay in your lane, Sir Lewis, but it is the second quickest yesterday in pre-practice, so that's not a bad performance. That's in the next hour. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, the Deputy Prime Minister has rejected suggestions the UK's defensive response to the crisis in the Middle East has been too slow. David Lammy has also told LBC that efforts are being ramped up to get people home from the region as the first government chartered flight arrives in the UK. And four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service by UK counter-terror police. LBC weather, rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales. Sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the M1 southbound to Junction 10 at Luton Airport. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Couple of problems on the M25. Firstly, on the Essex stretch, anti-clockwise, a lorry's just broken down. So it's at Junction 28 at the A12 and one lane is closed for recovery. And then also on the M25, but on the Kent stretch, there were delays anti-clockwise from Junction 2 at the A2 to the Dartford Tunnel. And that was after that car was on fire earlier. The M4 still very slow eastbound from the M25 up to Junction 4 at Heathrow after that lorry overturned much earlier on this morning. And on the train, Southern are disrupted between Horsham and Portsmouth Harbour.
This is LBC.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue, thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
With a gift in your will to UNICEF, you'll know that the job of making a better world for every child is in good hands. It'll be the start of an incredible journey, connecting you with a powerful community of people working tirelessly to protect and nurture children so they're empowered to take on the world. To find out more about leaving a gift in your will that never stops working for children, search UNICEF Legacy for a free guide today.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £169 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air. Woo! Wow, you really don't care. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
A southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
We'll talk about the proscription or banning of the IRGC. Kimia, you'll be the first call on that. But give me a minute if you would. I've not, and so many of you want, understandably, to get involved via emails or text, so let's get some of those out. John says, just imagine, Russia decides to launch an attack. We get a statement from the government. We will have a destroyer serviceable in 2 weeks. We are fully prepared. The stark truth is we don't have enough military hardware or personnel to mount any kind of realistic defence. It's frightening how vulnerable we really are. Alan Jay says, this is a total embarrassment for the people of the UK, having folk like Lammy and Starmer bumbling along, making the story up as they go along, instead of admitting that we are ill-prepared and underfunded to defend ourselves. And, excuse me, Alan makes the same point, Alan Jay makes the same point that John does. God help us if the Russians started firing drones towards the UK. Still staying with this, Kayella, how proud I am to be British, listening to you extol the virtues of ripping up all rules of engagement. Well, they're not, actually. I did some studying, or I did some reading up, I should say. And if you allow that the Iranian conflict is still live, you do not need a UN resolution. Not saying that this will be the justification put forward by the United States and Israel. You actually do not need any further justification. There are other grounds on which support, full support of the United States could have been permitted. But I will say this of Sakir, at least we do now know the approach. Whether we agree or not, he did outline it. Let's talk about the IRGC. Kimia and Brian, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I just wanted to call because, to be honest, for us Iranians, this isn't something that started yesterday or a month ago. It's been going on for 47 years.
Yep.
International governments have had 47 years to deal with this regime, knowing that chance of death to Britain were given by this regime only until a few years ago. So it's not something that they are not aware about. It's not something that these laws that they mention are just political terms to get around what they should diplomatically do. What we've been chanting on the streets, I'm pretty sure anyone who lives in London has seen these protests in multiple numbers.
Let me read to you, and this will be very keen to you, Kimia, as Iranian origin. The current action is justified as part of an ongoing conflict that has been raging since 1979, therefore does not require UN authorization. It's a preemptive self-defense permissible under Article 51 of the UN Charter, and it is a response to the regime's treatment of its own citizens, culminating in the slaughter of innocent protesters in January under the customary international law doctrine of humanitarian intervention. There are three planks on which we could have supported further. Kimia.
So yes, exactly. That's exactly what we're asking. To one, first help us, but this isn't a question about Iranians anymore. Coming from an Iranian, this is a question of, are you going to stand against something that is a threat to the world at this point? We have seen them attacking hotels in Dubai. British citizens are in these hotels. It's gone further than just helping another country based on international law. And it's unbelievable. Like, we're just sitting here, we can't even believe that the whole world has prescribed them, and the UK, being one of the most important powers, is yet not. And
I don't know that we are anymore. I wish we were one of the world's most important powers. I don't think we actually are. Kimia, when the dust settles, and please God, or to ever whom God you may pray, that soon, what do you think the future of Iran needs to be? Kimia.
The future of Iran needs to come from its people. I've seen, to be honest with you, Nick, I've seen conservative MPs post basically supporting the MEC, the MEK, or the NCRI, as they have named themselves now,
MCRI. You tell me what that means.
The NCRI is the National Committee of Resistance of Iran.
Oh,
they label themselves.
Sorry, I thought you said MCRI. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, NCRI. Yeah, go ahead.
They label themselves as another opposition figure of Iran.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were part of the Islamic Revolution of 1979, and only deflected from the IRGC or the Islamic people once they were thrown away by them because they no longer needed them.
Enjoyed our conversation. Kimia, stay with us as this story develops. Kimia, thank you. Have a safe weekend. Karen in Bromley, you want to talk more about the British position here, or at least the military position. Karen, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
I think it's, from my perspective, it's what appears to be a lack of total preparation.
Right.
As a working person, I work for a variety of companies, and we're expected to have constantly a disaster recovery plan and revisit it regularly. I also subscribe to the Foreign Office notifications, and 4 weeks ago, it advised not to travel to the Middle East as possible rise in unrest.
Right.
So why did the UK appear to be so unprepared and shocked?
That's such a good question. And you get these briefings as part of your job, do you? Because of you have to move personnel around the world. Is that broadly right?
Not necessarily. Sometimes because I've been on holiday to those places and
okay.
I've kept up to date. Because unfortunately, I was going to Sri Lanka when the terrorists hit there.
So early February, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office was saying, warning people not to travel or making them aware. Did they say not to travel or just be aware?
Be aware.
Be aware.
Be aware.
Okay. Karen, I've made a note of that next time I speak to someone. Thank you. Be aware. Be aware. Don't forget, of course. I just want to write it down. Be aware. Don't forget, this is the same Foreign Commonwealth Office. We spoke to a diplomat there who resigned this week. Do you remember this? Because on the day Kabul fell and British military forces were involved in the hazardous task of trying to evacuate personnel, it was World Afro Day for the Foreign Commonwealth Office. And then this last weekend, when the shelling was starting, or attempted shelling of Akrotiri, it was self-empowerment day for the Foreign Commonwealth Office intranet, how you should take control of your future and your career. No word of what might be going on. We have completely lost control of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, I would suggest. Tony and Barnum, your view, Tony, 4 minutes before nine the time. Tony, what do you say needs to happen next? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Your programme should come with a government health warning. Because it doesn't matter what minister you have on it, it just shows how incompetent they are.
I know.
What a shame you didn't have those
numbers
to hand. Only 80 people got off that plane.
I know.
When you had the deputy prime minister there.
But don't you think that's why he said I didn't know numbers? I think they were briefed in advance. Don't get into numbers. For God's sake, don't get into numbers.
Yeah. I mean, the defence secretary should resign. I mean, did he not know we had no warships ready?
Well, we just heard from Karen. The Foreign Office was warning against travel a month ago.
Yeah, and if he didn't know, why didn't he know? For weeks we've known that there was a Middle East war was possible.
And then they haven't got time to legislate because they go dancing. One in, one out, now £40,000 to leave, Rachel Reeves' budget, Edmund Brown's green policies, and building the Chinese embassy in the middle of London. What a shambles.
It's all going swimmingly. Tony, you should have had a job as a headline writer. That was very well done. Thank you. Enjoy your weekend. Dolly, in Blackpool. What do you want to say, Dolly? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Just a quickie. I'm disgusted with the lack of support for our British armed forces.
That's wrong. No, I've nothing but support for our armed forces. It's the support from the government.
I'm talking about your callers and the media. Negative.
It's the government. How many times have I said I don't mean the Royal Naval personnel, Navy personnel? It's the government, Dolly.
Talking about the public and the media, I've listened to Radio 4 this morning, Anna Foster.
Well, I've warned you about that in the past. I've no sympathy for you if you're listening to them over the road. It's not good for your health.
Knowledge is about listening to sources from many different backgrounds and not just...
tell my ex-wife.
I'm a Tory. He finally stood up to that lunatic in the White House. And what are the public doing? They're criticising him. For goodness sake, the man making the right decision with that lunatic in the White House with all his goons and all their money doesn't have a plan.
Were you not slightly confused by the fact it took him so long to make that decision, Dolly? Or do you think the timing was right?
No, I think we've got to be reasonable. This was a catastrophic decision. I don't suppose we got any warning from that lunatic. And I just think we do things well. We're steady and we're careful. And
but we're not,
yes...
But we're not deploying the ships particularly well, are we, Dolly?
All go wrong. It's a huge organisation, the military, and these things go wrong. You know,
What have you got armed forces for if not to protect military interests and British?
We'll protect people, but don't expect it to be immediate. I mean,
well, lastly, the Spanish have managed it, the Greeks have managed it, the French have managed it. Why can't the Brits?
Yeah, you see, you're all about what other people are doing. Let's just support our people, support Keir Starmer's position. I'm a Tory, but we've got to realise that that lunatic in the White House has brought us into this catastrophic situation.
All right. Dolly, thank you. Enjoy speaking with you. Be safe this weekend. The music means we must move on. Coming up after the news, Health Secretary Wes Streeting, real change of tack here, talking on TV what he described as an overdiagnosis of mental health conditions and ADHD in the UK.
There's an overdiagnosis, but also there are too many people being written off and too many people who just aren't getting the support they need.
Well, now, important work has come out to say there is no evidence that ADHD is overdiagnosed in the UK. So for those of you who say, oh, we didn't have it in our day, I think possibly a history lesson is coming your way. And is it time to tell him to stay in his lane? Sir Lewis Hamilton, great performance in practice down at the start of the Grand Prix season, but saying that Africa needs to come back from the Portuguese and the British centuries ago. 9 o'clock news is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy insists he's not embarrassed by the UK's response to the crisis in the Middle East. Ministers have been criticised in recent days for failing to have new defences in place to protect RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus, which was hit by a drone. The warship HMS Dragon's not expected to sail to the Eastern Mediterranean until next week. Speaking to Nick, Mr. Lammy rejected claims the UK has been too slow.
HMS Dragon is part of that operation, but it is not the only capability that the UK and our allies have.
What sort of look is it, Deputy Prime Minister? The French vessel, the Christabel Colon, is going to get there next week. We've still got the welders on board HMS Dragon.
Look, I think that that is an unfair assessment.
Everything I've said is accurate.
Of our military capability, recognising the Middle East.
David Lammy also told LBC that efforts are being ramped up to get Britons home from the Middle East. The first government chartered flight landed at Stansted Airport overnight. More than 140,000 people have told the Foreign Office they want help to leave the region. The US and Israel say they're moving into the next phase of their war on Iran as the conflict enters a seventh day. The US says it's sunk around 30 Iranian ships, with Iranian missile strikes down by 90%. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has told the American broadcaster NBC they're ready for new attacks.
We are waiting for them because we are confident that we can confront them. You can see the quality of our missiles after the last war because we learned lots of lessons. And we are prepared for any other eventuality, even, a ground invasion. And we know that we can handle that.
One other story this morning, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. They're accused of spying on locations and people linked to the Jewish community in London. Counter-terror officers made the arrests in Barnet and Watford earlier today. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 40 at 10,454. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Shout out to the savvy ones tuned in across the UK.
Who? Me?
Yeah, you. The ones who know a good deal when they see one. Like the house proud who protect their manor from broken branches to burst pipes. The dog walkers who take the lead when comparing pet cover for their pampered pooches. And the drivers with breakdown cover belting out those power banners. Here's to all of you making smart choices and finding your insurance at
Great.compare.
Now that's savvy.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 3 minutes after nine on Friday the 6th of March. Coming up in this hour, we move away from the conflict. We will return to it, I promise you. We move into the field of education. You know, this continuing sense that there's an over-diagnosis of children with SEN, special education needs or disabilities. Well, an important report seems to knock that back. We'll give you the full details and then, most importantly, of course, take your reaction. Reactions as well to this stance from Sir Lewis Hamilton, questioned by a South African journalist about Grand Prix being held in Africa.
I'm really looking forward to hoping that the people that are running those different countries all unite and come together and take Africa back. That's what I want to see.
It would be great to see a Grand Prix on African soil. Of course it would. But he goes on to say, take Africa or the continent back, from the French, the Belgian, the Portuguese and the British. He's about 300 years behind the speed of that, isn't he? He might be second fastest in practice, but not particularly there. And we will come back as the government continues. And indeed, I challenge Deputy Prime Minister about this aspect of international law. We'll try and work out whether international law has actually been broken in the events of last weekend.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Didn't seem to be like that in my day. If you have children who have educational needs, or friends who have children, or nieces, nephews, grandchildren, whatever it might be, and they say, oh, we're having trouble with our boy, we're having trouble with our girl, going to have to possibly get a statement, going to have to get SEND, going to get this, get the other, EHCP, emotional health care plan. Oh, it wasn't like that in our day. We didn't have that in our day. No. So it's over-diagnosis, which is something actually that was touched on by the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, telling the BBC.
There's an over-diagnosis, but also there are too many people being written off. And to your point about treatment, there's too many people who just aren't getting the support they need. So if you can get that support to people much earlier, then you can help people to either stay in work or to get back to work. And that's why we're recruiting 8,500 more mental health staff to make sure we can get the waiting list down.
So that's Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary. Well, now a team of 32 experts from around the country, including clinicians, academics and patients, warn the main issue surrounding ADHD is services cannot adequately support people who need help. Alarmist rhetoric could deny people the care. A paper's been published in the British Journal of Psychiatry, and it points out that around 1 in 20 children, around 5% of adults, are estimated to have ADHD. Well, that actually tallies in a sense with previous research that was done. Let's bring into the conversation Dennis Ogrin, who's child and adolescent psychiatrist at Queen Mary University. Now, I've done a bit of reading up on this, and let's go back to something called the Warnock Report. Why was that called for? What did it discover? And what were its key findings as we look at them today? Good morning to you.
Morning. Look, Warnock Report is something that really has to be taken into account when you think about the future. It happened many, many years ago, but some of the main premises of the report are very valid today, perhaps more valid today than ever, when we have to really think about, do we need to diagnose every child with a psychiatric disorder, or do we need to think about their needs? And of course, the answer is almost certainly the latter.
The Warnock Report was, I think, in the late 1970s, 1978, and I'm going to choose my language carefully here, but prior to that, children who had educational needs were effectively said to be disabled, mentally disabled, weren't they, Mr. Ugrin?
Exactly, yes. Now, the issue, of course, is impairment or dysfunction. I mean, that's the key to the diagnosis. And so, really, for your listeners, it's important to know that symptoms themselves are not enough for a diagnosis. You must have a dysfunction. The child must not function well in one of the areas, for example, at school or with the family or in after-school activities. But what the Warnock report did show us is that these young people, even with significant dysfunction, could be well integrated into mainstream schools, and that it, you know, their needs need to be assessed as opposed to just symptoms and impairment.
So what has happened? Because the numbers look broadly the same as they were identified in 1978 by Mary Warnock, as we find them here in 2026, but the level of support has not. What, as someone who works in this field, what haven't we joined up? What's gone wrong, if I can use that word?
Well, I'd say that almost certainly the primary driver of the increase in the number of diagnoses is awareness, is people being more aware about what it is, what are the symptoms, and what is the possible dysfunction or impairment linked with these symptoms. We don't really have strong evidence that at the population level, things have increased in terms of the number of kids with that diagnosis. There may have been some increase, but not as dramatic as what we see in the referrals. Now, having said that, we do need to accept that many young people and many children who struggle cannot wait for 2 or 3 years for the diagnosis. It may be that their entire life trajectory could change if they get a timely diagnosis and the timely support.
What this report in the British Journal of Psychiatry, what does our health service, what do our politicians, what do they need to take from it in your view?
Well, what I think is incredibly important is that overall, contrary to what many people are saying, the number of young people diagnosed with ADHD is nowhere near the prevalence in the population. You just said in your introduction about 5%, and that's about right. So the vast majority of kids are not diagnosed. Now, there is a very small number of families that seek the diagnosis and who can afford to pay for a private assessment and private treatment. And that has two problems. One is that some of these young people may not have the diagnosis, or perhaps the phenotype is so broad that, you know, the diagnosis is made on a very, very thin ground. But secondly, it really could increase very dramatically social inequalities in the country. So a child who is diagnosed promptly and treated will have significantly better life chances than a child who has to wait, whose parents cannot afford. And that, I think, has to be taken into account by any politician, and it has to form the basis of what we do with the services.
Grateful for your time today, Dennis Ugrin, your child and adolescent psychiatrist at Queen Mary University. Listening to that is Becky in Sunbury. Now, Becky, you come at this from two different angles, because I understand you have children with ADHD and you work in this field as well. What can you tell us, Becky? Good morning.
Yes, I have a 9-year-old boy with ADHD and a 20-year-old daughter with ADHD, both who are also autistic, and I am a mental health nurse as well.
What is the level of ADHD of your son and your daughter?
Completely different, actually. So both of them had their autism diagnosis first, and what I think is really interesting is up until 2013, having autism was an exclusion criteria for ADHD, yet now it's recognised that there is, it's quite common to have both. My son is your typical fidgety, hyperactive, a little boy, you know, can't sit still. Mm-hmm. My daughter, on the other hand, is quite the opposite. And she is more of your inattentive type. So she struggles with focus and what have you.
She's
so very,
20.
Very different.
Is she at college or in work, or what's the story with her?
No, because as the previous gentleman said, it's so difficult to get support.
I see.
That it has impacted her mental health quite significantly.
Right.
You know, and I think in the big picture, because we hear so many stories about young people out of work and out of education claiming benefits, there needs to be some acknowledgement of the impact of not having that support.
Becky, do you see a day when your daughter will be able to work?
Yes, because she is determined and she's strong and she has got the support behind her. Will it impact her life forever? Absolutely.
This report talks about, the British Journal of Psychiatry report talks about better knowledge, better understanding. As a mum of, mm-hmm. Of a child, a young child, 9, and now a sort of young adult as well, and working in the field, what do you think, what awareness needs to be made, Becky?
I think we need to move away from this. You didn't have it in my day.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, well, hopefully that's what I said right at the top. We did, that's what the Warnock report said.
Yeah, the diagnosis didn't actually exist in the diagnosis journals until the 1980s. So no, you wouldn't have had ADHD in the 50s and 60s because it wasn't a recognised diagnosis. And also, these children were written off. I'm sure we can all think back to our classroom days where you'd have the little girls who you know, daydreamed or didn't stop talking, and the little boys who were fidgeting on their chair and couldn't concentrate, and they were just written off as naughty. But I think also the expectations were very different. You know, children back in those days were expected to potentially leave school and go into vocational careers, whereas nowadays they're expected to stay within education until 18. The expectation is that they will go on to university. And this one-size-fits-all education system doesn't work for children with neurodiversities.
What is it you do, lastly, professionally in this field, then?
I actually work with older people, so my patient base is 65 and above. But what I find very interesting is that we are now seeing people within that age range saying, I think I might have ADHD. My grandson's just been diagnosed. I recognise a lot of the symptoms. I was just like that as a child and are looking for a diagnosis themselves.
How frustrated does that make these folks?
Extremely, because you look back at the life that they could have had. Because what you have to remember, and it's not for everybody, ADHD can be treated with medication, and that medication can be very, very effective.
Are your children on medication?
My older one is. Unfortunately, my son had to wait 2 years for an ADHD diagnosis, and now, following that diagnosis, has a 3-year wait for medication that we're able
to. Do you mind if I ask the drugs your daughter's on?
She's on a stimulant, which is basically it's a medical amphetamine.
And what does that help her to do? What does that
help her to focus, helps her to function.
Take it daily, does she?
Yeah.
Right, okay. I've got to go. I'm late already. Give both your children, the 20-year-old and the 9-year-old, my best wishes. And Becky, thanks for the work you do in a very challenging era. What should the level of awareness be? We're not ignoring the biggest story globally, which is, of course, events in Iran and the hesitance by the United Kingdom to get fully involved with the US, citing international law.
That will be a matter for the US and Israel to answer. And of course, there will be a debate amongst international legal lawyers.
But a pretty powerful argument put out in the Daily Telegraph today that it is within international law, the action. We'll get into that in more detail. It's 9:16, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, the Deputy Prime Minister has rejected suggestions the UK's defensive response to the crisis in the Middle East has been too slow. David Lammy has also told LBC that efforts are being ramped up to get people home from the region as the first government chartered flight arrives in the UK. And 4 men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service by UK counter-terror police. LBC weather, rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales, sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the M1 southbound down to Junction 10 at Luton Airport. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. One lane's also closed on the M25 anti-clockwise between Junctions 28 at the A12 and 27 at the M11. It's because a lorry has broken down. Delays continue on the M4 eastbound from the M25 to Junction 4 at Heathrow. It was after that lorry overturned in the early hours of this morning. Also, delays continue on the North Circular Road. It's very busy northbound up to the Hanger Lane gyratory. On the underground, the Northern Line remains suspended between Battersea Power Station and Charing Cross, and severe delays on the Central and Piccadilly lines.
This is LBC.
Shout out to the savvy ones tuned in across the UK.
Who? Me?
Yeah, you. The ones who know a good deal when they see one. Like the House Proud who protect their manor from broken branches to burst pipes. The dog walkers who take the lead when comparing pet cover for their pampered pooches. And the drivers with breakdown cover belting out those power manners. Here's to all of you making smart choices and finding your insurance at Now that's savvy.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Check your retirement savings are on track with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
AO members get 10% off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Hotpoint, Beko and Hoover. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at $39.99.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £169 million.
Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Tony, as a caller, the awareness of ADHD. Vitor, I'm going to do a couple of emails or texts first because I realise I didn't give enough of a display of those, enough show to those. Vitor, great conversation. I've been diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 42. It's changed my life and continues to do so. However, with this notion of overdiagnosis, I do feel imposter syndrome at times, but it's important to discuss. Same subject. Luke says, I'm 28. I've been trying to get a diagnosis of ADHD for the last year or so, and it's getting harder to manage the symptoms, which changes in life. However, the NHS is refusing to diagnose anyone over the age of 25. Is that true? This includes the right to choose a pathway, so I have no choice but to find the money to go private. Let's go one last one. Here we are. This comes from Shelby. 4 years waiting so far for medication. Now perimenopausal, which has made my ADHD worse. Tony's in Bracknell. Tony, your story on this. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Wes Streets' comment about
overdiagnosis.
And bringing them out to fail. I actually want my son to achieve.
Tell us a little bit about your son. How old is he?
He's 15. We've been on the waiting list for 18 months now for a CAMS appointment, and there's at least another 18 months before we could even get seen. So we actually made the choice to go private and get him diagnosed privately.
Do you mind asking how much that cost?
It was about £1,500.
And what was the discovery? What did it find?
So, yes, he definitely has got ADHD. We knew he had ADHD. He's a very classic, hyperactive kid, very, very chatty and talkative, very fidgety.
So armed with that, what do you do now?
So we have then gone down the route to get him privately medicated as well.
Right.
And because he was really struggling at school. He's bright, he's clever, but he his brain is constantly whirring and busy, and he couldn't concentrate in school. And he's just started on meditation in January, and he says it's just he feels so much more relaxed, that he's able to listen, that he's able to learn, and he's doing so much better.
What are the drugs that he's on, Tony?
So the brand name is Concerta. It's a stimulant.
Right, okay.
And we've had to play with his dose a little bit.
And how does it change your lad's approach to education or just general?
He's so much happier, and he's so much better able to cope with school. He would just get very frustrated that he knows his stuff, but yeah, he just couldn't sit in a class and concentrate, and he's doing so much better.
What's the feeling then? He's on this now for the rest of his life, or just through education?
I don't know whether he'll need it for the rest of his life. He only takes it when he goes to school, mm-hmm, but he would actually quite like to take it at the weekends as well, because he just feels calmer, and he said he feels really good.
This report in the Journal of Psychiatry talks about awareness. What do you think of the level of awareness currently, Tony?
I think it's probably a lot more prevalent out there than people think. And I don't think schools know enough about it. I don't think schools know enough about how to deal with kids with ADHD.
Given my best wishes, Tony, thank you. Matt, we're going to be speaking to you about that. But in other matters, and a story I have mentioned, or they call it in the business, trailed for whatever reason, I've mentioned a couple of times, which we need to come to, which is Sir Lewis Hamilton speaking ahead, of course, of the Melbourne Grand Prix, which will kick off the new Formula One Grand Prix season. I have to say, he's fared fairly well, by the way. Was it in second place? So second to his teammate, then. So he's okay, but he's still in second quicker, so that's pretty good. He was asked by a South African journalist about a potential return to Africa for the sport. Now, there's not been an African Grand Prix on the African continent since 1993 in South Africa. Sir Lewis said he has been fighting to get the sport to go back and pledged he will not retire until it does.
I think it is the most beautiful part of the world, and I don't like that the rest of the world owns so much of it and takes so much from it, and no one speaks about it. I'm really looking forward to hoping that the people that are running those different countries all unite and come together and take Africa back. That's what I want to see. Take it back from the French, take it back from the Spanish, take it back from the Portuguese and the British. It's so, so important for the future of that country and for that continent. I mean, they have all the resources to be the greatest and most powerful place in the world, and that's probably why they are being controlled the way they are. But anyways, move on.
Undeniably quick and brave on the track, one of the nation's greatest ever sportsmen of any sport, but is a history lesson required? David Blair, Chief Foreign Affairs Commentator for The Telegraph. I have to say, David, your colleague Simon Briggs has written a magnificent piece in the paper today in which he suggests that Sir Lewis needs a bit of a reminder or a wake-up regarding history. What would you say, David? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I would agree. He wants to take Africa back from the countries that, in fact, left quite a long time ago, about 60 years ago, in fact, in just about every case. So most African countries have been independent for about as long as they were ever under French or British rule. The countries that Sir Lewis needs to worry about, yes, are places like China, Russia, the United Arab Emirates, and we can go into what they're doing in Africa.
Well, let's do that, because, again, Simon Briggs, your colleague, says he should be looking to China, he should be looking to Russia. Why? Break it down for my listeners why attention should be focused there rather than Britain and Portugal.
So China is extracting critical minerals from Africa at an astonishing rate, and it's focusing on taking them from a country like Congo, for example, which is torn by conflicts anyway. And when you drive up demand and therefore the price of critical minerals in a place as volatile as that, you stir up civil wars. Russia is deploying mercenaries right the way across West Africa to inflame civil wars and prop up military regimes from the Central African Republic to Mali to Niger, etc. And the United Arab Emirates is sponsoring one of the most murderous armed groups in all history, which is laying waste to Western Sudan. And Sir Lewis thinks that Portugal might be a problem.
Lastly, do you see a day when African countries will have full self-determination, or will they always be a continent that's ravaged by issues such as these?
Well, there I agree with Sir Lewis Hamilton. I mean, of course, Africa deserves everything that he said. But the problems are from the countries that we've just discussed, Nick.
David, thanks for your time. David Blair, Chief Foreign Affairs Commentator at The Telegraph. Coming into this conversation, I just want to make something plain. Sir Lewis has every right to express views as regards racism and his views as regards the African continent. He's someone who's experienced racism, so I would not for a second say he doesn't have a position. Of course he does. But as you've heard from David Blair, the history is wrong. As he rightly said, and he's far smarter on this than I, you look to Russia, you look to China, you look to other countries rather than the British and the French, surely. And if he feels so bad about it, well, had he better take the Sir from the start of his name, just become Lewis Hamilton, and while you're at it, you're an OBE as well, member of the Order of the British Empire. Well, that surely doesn't sit that well either, does it? Of course have your say about racism. You've been an unfortunate victim of it, but is it a mixed message? Is he stuck on the grid? David in Maida Vale. What is it, David? Good morning.
Well, Nick, I think you're either playing games this morning, because I think you're being unfair to Lewis Hamilton. He's basically trying to raise awareness of the fact that, you know, there's huge Western European corporate interests still have their claws into Africa. It doesn't have to be political.
You did just listen to the gentleman on the radio, did you, who pointed out that it's Russia and it's China now that are capitalizing on these extraordinary assets.
Sorry, without steering the comments, that's generally been it. Russia and China's been doing their thing in Africa to some degree for years. In the same way China is in the Caribbean, 80% of the world's aluminium used to come from Jamaica, and right. China, you know, had a hand in
David, the United Kingdom, Portugal, they came out of Africa decades ago.
Nick, why does every one of these countries still have a governor general in these countries that
They don't all have governor generals, do they?
Well, there are strange political structures still in these countries. So, but listen, let me explain something to be clear. Yeah, Britain, British Empire, you know, did good and bad things. So we can't sort of point the finger at any particular one. But we've got to move forward with the attitude, knowing that Africa and regions like it need to move forward positively without interference from outside sources. At the end of the day, I understand the world has to get its minerals from somewhere and so on and so forth, but let's have a fair understanding of history. Don't just paint Lewis Hamilton like he's an idiot, because...
I didn't say he was an idiot. I said he needs to brush up on his history. Absolutely, I
did. No, he does not need to brush up, because his context, he's not talking about literally...
I think he does. When he says they need to take Africa, and then he says the continent back from the British and the Portuguese. How do you interpret that?
So
it's no longer controlled by Britain and Portugal and France.
If oil is found in Central Africa,
will you accept that Africa is no longer controlled by the British and the Portuguese?
I'm asking you a question.
Well, I asked you a question.
Go ahead. What is your question?
Will you accept that the continent is no longer controlled by the British, Portuguese, French and others?
Nick, you're asking me a square and narrow question.
I'm asking for a yes or no.
It's no longer politically correct, directly.
Right.
But there are arrangements that were pre-put into place that steers these places back into the clutches of Europe.
I'm talking about current times. No, you have to agree no.
Nick, to be honest, I'm beginning to think that you're either being silly or you just ain't got no compassion or common sense. Goodbye.
Well, it's been nice talking to you. Let's agree to disagree agreeably. We'll disagree agreeably. Colin says, did I really hear you say stay in his lane? Yes, Colin, as I said, he's also stuck on the grid. Think about it. He's a Grand Prix driver. Get it? Clunk. That's the penny dropping. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, insists he's not embarrassed by the UK's response to the crisis in the Middle East. Ministers have been criticised in recent days for failing to have new defences in place to protect RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus, which was hit by a drone on Sunday. Two Wildcat helicopters are due to arrive on the island today. Mr Lammy's also told LBC that efforts are being ramped up to get people home from the Middle East. The first government chartered flight landed at Stansted Airport overnight. And the US and Israel say they're moving into the next phase of their war on Iran as the conflict enters a seventh day. The Israeli military launched new missile strikes at Tehran overnight, as well as Iranian-backed Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. One other story, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. They're accused of spying on locations and people linked to the Jewish community in London. LBC weather, rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales. Sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
I will say the UK has been very, very uncooperative. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with.
Hear every side of the story.
So we are visiting Dubai on holiday. Unfortunately, the guidance that the UK government and embassy have been providing has been very conflicting.
We have booked 5 different flights from Dubai to London, and every single one of these flights has been cancelled.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
As a renowned co-educational pre-prep and prep school in Esher, Millbourne Lodge prides itself on a culture where boys and girls thrive together. We don't just teach, we build the foundation for a lifetime of success. Our pupils consistently achieve exceptional results, securing places and varied scholarships at the country's most prestigious independent senior schools. Discover the Millbourne difference at our open morning on March the 13th. To book your place, search Millbourne Lodge School Open Days.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Com. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up on our conversation about ADHD. So many people wanting to speak about this. Report in the British Journal of Psychiatry calling for greater awareness across so many levels, not just local authorities, but NHS trusts as well. Renee's in Borehamwood. Renee, I imagine this might be one of your children or someone. Who are we talking about? Good morning.
Yes, we're talking about my son.
Okay.
Who's now 17.
Right. And so, how's he getting on?
Yeah, he's doing really, really well. He's doing great. I'm honestly very surprised where we started when he was 5-6 years old to where he is now.
How was he when he was 5 or 6? What were the issues?
So the issues were school, and the issues were concentration, and you know, it's the regular stock standard that we're hearing from all parents of young kids.
Mm-hmm.
We were in South Africa at the time, and being put on medication was just the way to go. So everyone was kind of put on medication, but honestly, my son needed it. He wasn't coping at school.
What was the medication? How easy was it to get it? And what was the medication you ultimately got?
Well, it was very easy to get because, like I said, we were in South Africa and we had private medical.
Yep, yep.
And it was very easy to get. And we went to see a psychiatrist. I think we had 2 sessions. She recommended the medication. He was put on it straight away. Because we had private medical, there was no issue with getting it on a monthly basis. And he was on a very, very high dose of Concerta his whole primary school and until we came here.
What was the change when he had Concerta?
He just calmed down. I think that the noise that was in his head and, you know, the continuous whirring kind of just quieted a bit. Of course, there was the side effects of lack of appetite at certain times of the day, and it did affect his sleep, and that was something that we had to manage, especially when he was young. We had to kind of find coping mechanisms to deal with that.
And what age was he when you came up from South Africa?
We came up in 2020, so
And what? Lastly, what did you know? What were the differences between the treatment and awareness in South Africa as it is here in the United Kingdom?
Completely different. Like I said, in South Africa, if you have private medical and your child or the teacher says your child has ADHD. Yeah. It's just a given.
But what about, like, teachers and other mums and dads and folk like that? Is there more awareness in South Africa than the UK?
I would say absolutely. But I would say it's a diagnosis that's very easily given and potentially a little bit too easily. But that wasn't my son. My son needed it, absolutely. And this helped him to get through school. Even when we came here to the UK, he still stayed on the medication because he had been diagnosed in South Africa. We continued to get it on the NHS. It was not a problem.
Okay.
Up until about a year and a half ago, and he decided to take himself off the medication.
Finally, 15, so presumably getting ready to do some GCSEs and possibly some A-levels, he's going to be able to work and pursue a career?
Absolutely. So he did his GCSEs while he was still on the medication, finished his GCSE, decided that he didn't want it anymore, took himself off, became, in general, socially a much happier child off the medication, made friends, had relationships, things like that.
So is he doing A-levels now or not?
At the moment he is, yeah.
Oh, he is doing it. So when does he take those?
He's doing a T-level in business. And okay. So he's kind of done his exams and it's just coursework now. So he's almost done.
Thanks for all the background. Fascinating to hear how I would appear they're slightly ahead of us in South Africa, although, again, this report is trying to raise that awareness, and we all come back to that conversation. So many of you want to have your say. But should we look at this aspect? Thanks again, Renee. Best wishes to the young man. Should we look again at this aspect of international law, which some have suggested the government is hiding behind. Others have said they're correctly citing it as regards our response. Something I explored in the first hour of the show with Deputy Prime Minister, Justice Secretary, David Lammy.
Well, that will be a matter for the US and Israel to answer. And of course, there will be a debate amongst international legal lawyers. That is not for me today. We were very clear that we would not be involved in the offensive action, but we are involved in the defensive action, which has a legal basis.
Well, can we see that legal basis?
And I am content with that. Well,
can you publish that legal basis, just to allay the concerns of my listeners?
There was a summary made available at the point at which the Prime Minister stood up earlier in the week and made clear the legal basis on which we would be engaged in defensive action, but he was concerned about plan, understandably. But now, where there are British civilians, British armed forces across the region, of course we will do everything we can to keep them safe.
But surely this action is part of an ongoing conflict that's been raging since 1979 and therefore does not need further UN authorization. It's also a preemptive self-defence permissible under Article 51 of the UN Charter, I read. That's the true legal advice, isn't it?
Well, that will come down largely to whether there was an imminent threat. What I can say is that as Foreign Secretary, I sat down with the Iranians on many occasions. I challenged them on uranium enrichment in their country. I'm afraid the answers that I received were not satisfactory to me or my French and German colleagues that I was sitting down with at the time. It was not satisfactory to the US, and I updated Marco Rubio about this following a meeting last year. That is the basis on which the Americans and the Israelis have sought to act. It is for them to defend and to explain their legal basis, not for me.
David Lammy speaking with me in the first hour. So this issue of international law, let's put it to Khan Ross, who's former head of Middle East policy for the UK mission to the United Nations and former head of the Arab-Israel desk at the Foreign Office. As you interpret international law, where does it stand regarding Saturday's events? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. It's pretty clear. I mean, listeners should know that, you know, for all this prevarication from government ministers or indeed international lawyers throwing up dust, the legality of war is fairly simple. Either it's only legal in two circumstances. One is self-defense, and that's very clear under the UN Charter. And the second, if there is explicit authorization from the UN Security Council. And of course, neither is the case in this instance.
What of the argument that it can be deemed to be a response to the Iranian regime's treatment of its own citizens, culminating in the slaughter of protesters, innocent protesters in January, under what's called the customary international law doctrine of humanitarian intervention? Mr. Ross.
Yeah, I mean, we may think that's right, but it's not legal. It has to be authorised. The only time that that doctrine has been put into practice was the NATO intervention in Libya, and it was explicitly referred to the so-called right to protect, where other states have the right to protect a civilian population that's under threat from its own government. And again, in that case, it was authorized by the Security Council. I have to say, I don't think such authorization would happen again, given what subsequently happened in Libya.
And the other argument, that it's part of an ongoing conflict that has been raging since 1979, therefore does not require further UN authorization. You don't see that argument holding water?
I don't, I'm afraid. There hasn't been a conflict raging since 1979. There wasn't a conflict in 1979. There was a revolution in Iran, and that didn't trigger a conflict, nor any legal authorization for attack. So that argument doesn't make sense. And I dare say, having listened to David Lammy saying that legality is for the Americans and Israelis to answer, is simply not true. It is also for other states to make judgments about the legality of a military action like this.
Without dragging you into the political arena then, Mr. Ross, had your counsel been sought by the PM or the Deputy Prime Minister, you would broadly be in line with the stance that was taken and has been developed by the UK over the last 6 days or so.
Yeah, I think I would on the legality question. But, you know, I have to be honest, there have been occasions when NATO has undertaken action that is clearly illegal under the Charter, and it was nevertheless the right thing to do. In Kosovo in 1999, when Serbia was ethnically cleansing Kosovo Albanians from Kosovo, NATO attacked Serbian forces to stop them doing that. That was not authorised by the Security Council, yet if you ask any Kosovar, it was absolutely right.
So how that then, therefore, that was allowed to proceed under this, what is it called, humanitarian intervention angle?
No, it wasn't. I mean, it,
so how was
the,
that?
The Allies did not. The Allies did not claim any legal authorization for it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So what do we?
I mean, they said there's a moral reason for it, and that is enough for us. But I don't think they ever said there's a legal reason for it, because there wasn't a legal case. It just didn't stand up. The legality of conflict, to be honest, is not that complicated. It's a bit frustrating to hear international lawyers and politicians say, oh, it's for lawyers to judge and the ICJ to judge, like in Gaza. It's not. It's not complicated.
And the moral argument that we talked about as regards Kosovo cannot be transferred to this position as regards Iran.
It's hard, much harder to say. I mean, I personally, you know, the Iranian regime is despicable. Many Iranians I know are very much hoping for its overthrow. But the case in Kosovo was that there was a concerted military campaign by Serbia to remove the Kosovar Albanian population from Kosovo. They were literally driving the population out of the country. So in a sense, it was a clearer case of brutality towards the population. Not that what Iran has done to its own population is not brutal, but you could argue it's clearer in the case of Kosovo.
Fascinating talking to you. Thanks for all your input. Khan Ross, your former head of Middle East policy for the UK mission to the United Nations and former head of the Arab-Israel desk at the Foreign Office. Well, probably mercifully for some of you who might have heard enough about the Iranian conflict, we will come back to our conversation about raising awareness of issues around ADHD and other areas after, of course, that report for the Journal of Psychiatry. It'll be the other side of the 9:45 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
The Deputy Prime Minister has told LBC that efforts are being ramped up to get people home from the Middle East as the first government chartered flight arrives in the UK. David Lammy has also told Nick that he's not embarrassed by the UK's defensive response to the Iran crisis. And four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. LBC weather. Rain lingering across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays continue on the M1 southbound Junction 10 at Luton Airport. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Still very slow on the M4 eastbound, heading up from the M25 to Junction 4 at Heathrow because that lorry overturned earlier this morning. Very busy on the A12 northbound up to Junction 13 at Ingatestone. That was after an accident. And in Romford, Rush Green Road is closed eastbound, and that's because a bus has broken down. On the underground, there's still problems for the Northern line. It's back up and running now to Battersea Power Station, but with delays. And there are severe delays as well on the Central and Piccadilly lines, and minor delays for Southern between Tunbridge and Redhill after an investigation from earlier.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Time perhaps to try to work out what the people who say they support this war think they're actually supporting, and meet the MP who served in Iraq and can't believe history is repeating itself.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
AO members get 10% off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Hire, AEG and Hisense. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at $39.99.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
On the subject of ADHD, someone who asks me to observe their anonymity, and of course I shall. He, she says, I work in a GP surgery as a clinician. I have patients, I have parents wanting autism or ADHD diagnoses. The reason is the benefits these children and parents will get. Most of them are on universal credit. Jenny in St. Helens on the Sir Lewis Hamilton story. Sir Lewis needs to worry more about the Chinese who seem to be taking over African countries these days. Something that our correspondent from the Daily Telegraph said. Let's take a call on that. Craig's in Newham. Is Sir Lewis Hamilton onto something, or is he perhaps a little bit back in time, thinking of Graham Greene novels and matters such as that? Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick. I think that they're all, you know, everybody's been exploited in Africa for a long time.
Sadly,
and
yeah.
If you think about China and Russia, they're just part of a larger system. You know, everybody's doing it. You know, if you talk about the England has come out of it,
Britain.
They've only come out of it as the nationality. But if you look at the companies that are in there, Anglo American, Glencore, Petra Diamonds, Gemfields, these are all companies that are related to UK. There's loads of them. So
yeah, but they're not government, are they?
But
it's not like it's the UK or the French or the Portuguese.
These places. It's rarely that it's the company. It's rarely that it's the country. It's companies.
Right.
It's companies that are controlling or very powerful entities that are controlling these situations.
So what needs to happen, do you think, in these countries or indeed on the continent as a whole?
Well, I think there's... It's a universal thing. You see some of the conflicts that's going on. We've got to hold people to account.
We've got to hold people to account. What do you mean by that? In what way? In what way?
Okay. For instance, if you think about companies mining minerals, they make sure that there is conflict in the countries.
Why?
And so that they can extract the resources. Because what
they're
doing is illegal.
How does it help them to have conflict in a country if you're seeking to mine diamonds, whatever it might be? Why do you want conflict?
Because what they're doing is illegal, and it's quite...
Obviously it's not illegal, because they're registered companies.
Even if you register companies, just because you register a company, it doesn't mean what they're doing is legal.
Do you mean legal or moral? Which one do you mean?
I'd say legal and moral.
Well, of course it's not illegal, otherwise they'd be closed down.
But to be honest, Nick, there's a lot of companies that, look at...
let's be careful. I don't know if I necessarily want to identify individual companies, but of course you can discuss the morality and the pay that some of these people in these industries earn, but...
For instance, if somebody puts you in power... you say you have a public government.
Mm.
You pay them to keep other people in place or get your license or whatever. And it's like...
So you're talking about corruption, the level of corruption.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Unfortunately, I fear you're probably spot on there, sir. I think there is an enormous amount of corruption, most of which will never be proven. And if he talked about that, if Sir Lewis has addressed that, what is perceived to be the level of corruption... Yeah, I think there's a real, real debate to be had there. Craig, I'm glad we got there in the end. Thank you for your input on that. But it is ADHD that you really have locked onto. Apologies to Matt in Manchester, who's been hanging on the line. Matt, what's the point you want to make? Good morning to you.
Are you okay?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that. I think it's the child mental health services that are in real dire problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've got issues with my son.
You've got a son.
I've got issues with my son.
Yes.
Trying to get a diagnosis.
Yes.
On the NHS.
How old is he?
He's 15 now, going on to 16.
And how old was he when the symptoms started to show themselves, Matt?
Probably around 10 or 11 last year at primary school. And I think there's a direct correlation between the probably intensity of schoolwork and demand on schoolwork. Obviously, as he's got older and that demand's got higher, that's when it's become more prevalent.
I see.
So
have you've got the diagnosis now, did you say?
No, we haven't.
You haven't
We're
yet.
Waiting to get it, so we're on a queue for that.
Do they indicate how long you might have to wait?
Potentially about a year and a half, and then there's a queue for medications. So the fear is really that by the time he's diagnosed and potentially medicated, it'll be in adult mental health services then, and now child mental health services will drop him, and he'll end up in a queue again. For the adult mental health services. But in the meantime, his education is pretty much ruined because of the...
So he's not doing well at school?
No, he's not really attending at all, to be honest. He goes an hour. The school's been okay with him in terms of attendance, but he's just crippled by... Can't go to school. And some might say it was due to technology, but he doesn't have any of that. It's all been taken off him, and he's just crippled by... whatever it is, they think it might be autism as well, as ADHD.
But what does he, if he doesn't go to school, if he's, I assume he's at home, what does he do?
He will sit there crippled in bed doing nothing. He'll be awake, showered, but just can't do anything. I think they call it paediatric demand avoidance.
What, and he physically can't get out of bed, the lad?
Just can't move. He does go to school eventually, but not very much.
How long before you're going to get this lad seen by the necessary team or department?
It could be up to a year and a half, but the trouble we have is we go to mental health services and they say self-help, but a child that doesn't see any problem is never going to self-help.
But that's shocking. Your lad's got these issues. And it might not be until what? Towards the end of, hang on a second, towards the end of 2027 that he sees anybody.
Potentially, yes. And he's now in the queue. Initially, Cam's mental health would not see him at all. He just kept rejecting him. And I appreciate that. There's a lot of people out there. You know, there's a lot of children out there that are in probably worse states in terms of suicide, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
That probably need to be seen.
Well, we don't. I mean, my God, we don't want to go to that level. Matt, we discuss these matters quite regularly, actually. Do stay in touch and let me know how the lad gets on. That's horrible to think. He just spends his day just, poor kid, just hasn't got the wherewithal to get out of bed. Matt, stay in touch. I wish him well. Thank you. And I don't say that glibly, but I'm trying to get at least one more call on before we get to the news. Darren's in Hayes. Darren, your view on this level of, or lack of level of awareness, the Journal of Psychiatry says. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think this is the... I have to agree with Wes Treaton. I don't really like this, but...
Really?
Yeah, because...
But when you hear our callers, Darren, does that not tell you something?
Yes, but I do think we are over-diagnosing because it allows the system to be abused.
Right.
How many people that have been diagnosed with ADHD have received personal independence payments or have made an application for that benefit? And if we go back years ago, I'm someone who had a statement which would have been an old-fashioned EHCP.
Yep.
I never needed additional benefits for that. I used to get the help in school. I had to work hard on when I was at home. And I'm really, really see this quite a lot, that people are applying for personal independence payments just because they've been diagnosed with ADHD.
Look, I'm sure you're right. I wouldn't be so ridiculous to say that that doesn't... And there is abuse in any system, but that doesn't help with matters like the lad that Matt, his boy, you know, we can't see him for 18 months. I mean, that's... In a country such as the United Kingdom, that's just not acceptable, is it?
No, but if we didn't have so many people abusing the system, the waiting times wouldn't be as bad.
I see what you're saying.
I would ask you for the next few people that you could talk to. There won't be now.
But we'll return because tell me what you think needs to be explored next time we cover this subject, Darren.
The amount of people that claim benefits from this diagnosis.
How are we going to tighten it? Because you're right. If we didn't have people who, and I don't know what the percentage is, but if we didn't have people clogging up the system, then Matt's lad could probably be seen far quicker. So. What do we bring in? How do we police? How small p? How do we police this?
I would remove ADHD from the personal independence payment system and see how and make it a banded system. So it's very easy now to go in and say you've got ADHD, you apply for the benefit, then eventually you get allowed it.
I got it. I hear what you're saying, Darren. I'm sure. Not with withstanding events in the Middle East, we will return to it. So thank you. You had the last word because we're done for another day. If you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player or the LBC app, where you can also stay app to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. You may have detected over the last few years that I have an enduring fascination with characters in the business of being paid to do politics or to provide opinions, but have spent the last decade being categorically and catastrophically wrong about everything. Boris Johnson, Brexit, austerity, Liz Truss, and latterly, of course, Donald Trump. They are now queuing up to support the idea of a war in Iran being deranged, by a deranged lunatic. And even as the deranged lunatic fails entirely to explain what the war is actually for or about, they continue to support a thing that they neither understand nor can justify. I wonder this morning if we can work out why.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy has rejected suggestions the UK's been too slow in its response to the crisis in the Middle East. Ministers have been criticised for failing to have new defences in place to protect RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus, which was hit by a drone on Sunday. The warship HMS Dragon is not expected to sail to the Eastern Mediterranean until next week. Speaking to LBC, Mr Lammy insisted that the UK isn't playing catch-up.
Well, there was rapid deployment into pre-deployment into the region from January and February. That's why F-35s were in the region. That's why radar is in the region. We've got 400 personnel dealing with air defences across the region. HMS Dragon will be in the region in the coming weeks. That is not the only capability we have to protect air defences in Cyprus and across the Gulf.
Mr. Lammy also told LBC more flights will be scheduled to get Britain's home from the Middle East in the coming days. More than 140,000 people have told the Foreign Office they want help to leave the region. The first government chartered flight landed back at Stansted Airport from Oman overnight. These people were on board.
We actually left Dubai on Saturday when it all started. We just thought, well, it'd be safer to drive to Muscat.
We've been travelling for about 42 hours from Dubai. We left yesterday lunchtime. We travelled straight to the airport in Oman and then waited at the airport yesterday for 8 hours.
The US has eased its embargo on Russian oil after prices rose because of the Iran war. India has been given a 30-day waiver to buy Russian sanctioned oil to help keep supplies flowing in the global market. Earlier this week, President Trump said that the US Navy would escort tankers through the Strait of Hormuz if necessary to protect international supplies. The shipping route's been effectively closed by Iran's threats to target vessels. One other story this morning, four men have been arrested on suspicion of aiding Iran's intelligence service. They're accused of spying on locations and people linked to the Jewish community in London. The group were detained at addresses in Barnet and Watford by counter-terror officers earlier. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up three at 10,415. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, rain will linger across large parts of England and Wales. Some sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compare the Market. Take it away, Sergei.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And I almost feel that I should apologise to people who are still clinging to the carcass of the idea that Donald Trump was anything other than a depraved and deranged lunatic. This show must be unbearable listening for you. Sort of just not even a very big mirror that I hold up every morning and you look in it and see a complete idiot. And I say that with great affection. You know, we've all done idiotic things in our lives, but if you're not yet ready to admit that you were a bit of an idiot when you allowed your, whatever it was, racism, misogyny, latent, a sort of fraudulent belief that you might somehow profit from climate change denial. Is there anything else that we could put on that list that sort of tickled your fancy, the way he treated women? Did you like that? Did you like that? Steve knows what I'm talking about. He's been in touch already. He says, I'm just wondering if you have any other tunes to play. I hate Donald Trump and the Tories. Becomes a bit tedious when it's the only time tune you play all day, every day. Listen, Steve, it's easy to get through this period of your life. You just need to let go of your support for the man who sued a woman who accused him of rape for libel and lost. The multiple felon, the man who lies about elections. If you can just let go of that, and I don't know whether you like the self-confessed sex offending more than the racism, or whether it's the racism that you like more than the misogyny, or maybe it's the climate change denial that tickles the cockles of your what passes for your heart. But if you can, I promise you, mate, if you can let go of it, your life will improve, and she may even let you see the kids again. It's 4 minutes after ten. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And we turn our attention today to people like Steve, who have been categorically wrong about everything now for the best part of a decade. We are thinking of Boris Johnson, Brexit, austerity, Liz Truss, and latterly Donald Trump. We are looking at YouGov polling that shows, wait for it, 8% of Britons think the UK should be actively joining the US-Israeli attack on Iran. And we are looking at our corporate media and seeing that approximately 80 or 90% of its commentators and contributors think that the United Kingdom is somehow embarked upon a shameful or a cowardly
pass. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail responds to news of a school being blown up by probably American forces in Iran by being ashamed that the Brits aren't involved in that kind of activity. He's never been more ashamed in his life than in the week that we failed to join a war which began by bombing a girls' school. And these people, of course, have led the line in this country on all sorts of positions that have been all sorts of wrong. Demonstrably, provably, irrefutably wrong. Brexit, an absolute disaster. Liz Truss, an absolute disaster. Boris Johnson, an absolute disaster. Austerity, an absolute disaster. And when they dip their curdled little toes into international relations, Donald Trump, an absolute disaster. But I'm worried about something called manufactured consent. It's a well-established theory. Unfortunately, given that he has been utterly... what would the right word be? Discredited seems so mild, doesn't it, to describe people that were very, very tight with Jeffrey Epstein. But Noam Chomsky, a brilliant, brilliant thinker, was incredibly tight with Jeffrey Epstein. And unlike Donald Trump, who was also, of course, incredibly tight with Jeffrey Epstein for many, many years, Chomsky has sort of paid the price in terms of reputation and credibility. But he co-wrote a book a few years ago, I forget precisely when, called, or one of the subtitles of it was Manufactured Consent. And it's one of those things, or it was called Manufacturing Consent, The Political Economy of the Mass Media. It was published in 1988, just as I was preparing to do my A-levels, or beginning my two-year A-level course. And it is absolutely fascinating, because it speaks directly to the way in which we are cajoled and persuaded, we are gaslit and groomed, into acting against our own interests. And it's not something... I mean, I'm 54 years old now, if you're newish to the programme, and I've been engaged in these kind of issues for about 21, 22 years, a bit longer, say 24 or 25. It wasn't what drew me into journalism in the first place. I wanted to be a book reviewer or a theatre critic, and then I became a gossip columnist, and after that I was a showbiz journalist, and then a brief foray as a video games reviewer. But I didn't ever think I would end up in this kind of world. And I turned up here a few years, many, many years ago, because I had a tax bill to pay and someone had suggested I might be able to do a shift for them. And I came in and I fell in love. The minute I sat behind this microphone, I fell in love. But one of the things I love most about it, I fell in love with you in a way, actually. Not you. One of the things I love about it most is that I am constantly taken by surprise. Constantly taken by surprise. I'm constantly learning. It's odd, really, because the traditional proponents of this format never learn anything. They keep hitting the same drums and indulging the same prejudices, airing the same bigotries and making the same mistakes year after year, after month, after week, after day after day. You can spot them from a mile off. They use phrases like Trump derangement syndrome or Brexit means Brexit to disguise the fact that they're supporting something they can neither explain, articulate, justify or understand. And I've just got a horrible feeling that it's happening again with this war. Dick Littlejohn has never been more ashamed to be British, while 8% of the population think that we should be getting involved in the thing that he's deeply ashamed we're not involved in. I mean, that is an extraordinary moment, and the reason why it gives me trepidation